Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby! Mandaloon was second, Hot Rod Charlie was third, Essential Quality was fourth.
He seems to move forward off the Derby. His weight's great, his energy level's great. You know, just happy with everything we've seen post-Derby. He's had two works. He had a fantastic work this past weekend. His first work was by himself, just a easy half and 50. Did a little bit more with him this past weekend, responded well. And we're looking to go a 5/8 with him on Saturday at Churchill. And if all's well, on to the Belmont.
I think with Hot Rod Charlie, one of the beauties of him is he's so versatile that I think you know, having the continuity of Flavien Pratt ride him back is huge. And Flavien can just play the break. And, you know, in an ideal world, probably not the only one thinking this, but, you know, if we got an easy lead, that'd be a beautiful thing. But he has shown in the past that he can lead all the way or come from off the pace. So I think we got options.
It is now Rombauer storming to the front, taking over from Midnight Bourbon. Medina Spirit has dropped back. Keep me in mind is fourth. Rombauer and Flavien Pratt win the Preakness.
A lot going on, obviously. It's a little bit overwhelming, you know. It's always nice to win a big one, but when you win one like that, I got to tell you, it's been a little bit overwhelming. But we're a little over a week out to the Belmont, so it's time to kind of tighten the screws and concentrate on what we've got ahead of us. This horse is proven to be effective wherever he goes, on whichever surface it is. I'm very pleased with what I'm seeing from him. His weight is good. His attitude is great. He's had a couple looks around the main track. He's done some training on the training track at Belmont. He's had two solid days over on the main track. He's been to the paddock. So he's fallen nicely into a routine here, and we're expecting a nice little solid piece of work from him.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Well, you think there's going to be a few storylines surrounding this year's Belmont Stakes? Yeah, you betcha. That open that you just heard only scratches the surface. Preakness hero Rombauer squaring off with a slew of fresh contenders like juvenile champion Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie, and, of course, the always dangerous Todd Squad. You heard Brad Cox in the open talking about Essential Quality going 5/8 of a mile on Saturday morning. He did that earlier this morning. 59.2, the time for that work. I would have to assume, all things being equal, he comes out of the work well. We will see the juvenile champion next Saturday in the Big Apple. Of course, no Triple Crown on the line next week at Belmont Park, but what a setting. The daunting mile-and-a-half oval known as Big Sandy. Good morning once again, everyone. Happy Memorial Day weekend, and welcome to the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com. Right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, in the saddle with you for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And I will spend plenty of time on today's show looking ahead to next Saturday's Test of the Champion. You'll hear from Preakness-winning jockey Flavien Pratt right around 9 o'clock Eastern. Flavien made that curious choice to jump ship on the proven classic winner Rombauer and reunite with Hot Rod Charlie, whom he finished a valiant third aboard in the Kentucky Derby. He talks about that decision and much, much more to kick off hour two of today's program. Trainer John Sadler is going to be with me in the final segment of today's show, right around 10:40 Eastern. He'll help wrap it up this morning for you. And he's going to share his thoughts on Rock Your World, who will be hoping to get off to a much, much cleaner start in the Belmont than what he experienced in Louisville 4 weeks ago. It was a bad beginning for Rock Your World. Really lost pretty much all chance at the start of that Kentucky Derby. We'll see if he can fare better next week, but John Sadler will tell you more about that at 10:40. And plenty of racing coming up across the country later today and this Memorial Day weekend. And by the way, let's not forget those who have made the ultimate sacrifice to our country. That's what this weekend is all about, and we celebrate it either by going out and visiting grave sites or taking time to just stop and think and remember, and I think that's very important on this weekend. Important, too, to take in some racing. If you're a fan of this show, you're a fan of this network, you're obviously going to be paying attention to what happens on the racetrack later today and, of course, over the course of the next several days. Greatest Stakes winner, Spanish Love Affair, is the 5-2 morning line favorite in today's Grade 3 Regret Stakes at Churchill. And that is part of their Stephen Foster preview card, which features seven stakes races. Two of those are grade threes. Our good friend Michael Hernan, who has not been on the program in a while. It's been too long since we've had a Michael Hernan sighting here on the Equine Forum. Well, he's the principal owner of Spanish Love Affair, and he's going to be with me in just about 7 or 8 minutes to help fill you in on her return. Really looking forward to seeing her back in action later today. You're going to hear from Kevin Kirstein, who is the publicity manager at Churchill Downs. He comes up at 8:35. Kevin will, of course, take a closer look at not just the regret, but all the big races on that Saturday program. In addition, our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, Unsung Heroes, brought to you by Claiborne. Those both come your way in hour two. And I will welcome exercise rider Greg Smothers to the program for that edition of Unsung Heroes this week. You won't want to miss it. The longtime exercise rider for trainer Niall Brennan. He's been with Niall for more than 30 years. I think it's actually closing in on 35, 36 years that they've been together. It's a wonderful story. He'll be with me for that segment. And then Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, presented by Keeneland and Lane's End, which will be the featured segment in the third hour of today's show. So an awful lot of things coming your way between now and 11 a.m. Eastern. Earlier this week, I tweeted about the situation in New Jersey regarding the new regulations focused on jockeys' use of the whip. Now, this is not a new story. Those regulations were put in place officially last September. But, of course, they started with the Monmouth meet, which began yesterday. I just couldn't keep quiet on this any longer. 5 weeks ago, you heard from jockey Chris DiCarlo on this show. Chris had talked with Bobby Newman and guest co-host Chuck Simon on our weekly race day show. And he did a really nice job explaining this new rule and why so many riders have taken umbrage with the new regulations. This story, it took a whole new layer, added a whole new layer this past week when jockey Nick Juarez, who was currently serving a six-day suspension handed down by order of the New Jersey Racing Commission Board of Stewards, and he showed up in the entries for today's races at Monmouth. He's named to ride seven races at Monmouth today and seven more tomorrow. The dates of his six-day suspension were very clear. Friday, May 28th, through and including Monday, May 31st, and two additional days on Friday, June 4th, and Saturday, June 5th. Now look, it's no secret that Monmouth is feeling the heat of jockeys who have refused to ride as long as this new whip regulation remains in place. Yesterday's opening day program attracted, 44 entries? And only 14 jockeys that were willing to ride on what became a six-race program? So when I tweeted about this on Thursday, my question was quite simple. Did the New Jersey Racing Commission amend its ruling on Nick Juarez? And unfortunately, I still can't seem to find that answer. But I can tell you, something is not adding up here. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark, or New Jersey in this case. And I'm going to ask those questions and try to get some answers. And I'll ask a lot more questions, even more questions than that one, to Jockeys Guild President and CEO Terry Meeks and Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez right around 9:35, 9:40 this morning. They will both be with me for that segment, and I'm going to ask them what's going on. We'll see if they have answers as to what this situation is all about. But you have a jockey that was suspended 6 days, and all of a sudden there's a jockey shortage, and here he is. Nothing against Nick Juarez, but I'm wondering what happened with the Racing Commission here. Did they amend that ruling? I don't know. I can't find it anywhere. Maybe Terry and Johnny can shed some light on what's happening, but it's just another layer in what is becoming a just nightmare story in the state of New Jersey. All right, here's the question of the day, which you can go ahead and let me know your thoughts at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. You can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. The question of the day brought to you by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference this morning. If you could go back in time and attend just one Belmont Stakes, which one would you choose? That's what I want to know. If you could go back in time and attend just one Belmont Stakes, which one would you choose? Let me know at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And again, if you don't do social media, email me. You can always get in touch with the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. It's an interesting question because there are so many moments. You know, the Belmont, the first Belmont we ever broadcast here on the network in 2007, Rags to Riches defeating Curlin. That would be a pretty good one to go back to. I can remember the first time that my wife and I ever went on an official date. It was to the Belmont Stakes, the year that Thunder Gulch won. That was a pretty cool Belmont to go to. So, you know, a couple of those moments. But there have been so many good ones. You know, if you want to go back to American Pharoah, maybe you want to go back and watch Secretariat and see what that was all about. But if you could go back in time and attend just one Belmont Stakes, you can only pick one, which one would you choose? Let me know. I'll try to update the results as we move throughout the morning. Again, very busy morning. It begins with Michael Hernan, who comes up next right after this first commercial break. Kevin Kirstein going to be with me at 8:40-ish, right in that ballpark, 8:35 maybe. We'll try to get to Kevin. We'll talk about all the big races coming up at Churchill. You'll hear from Flavian Pratt at 9 o'clock. Our Unsung Heroes segment with exercise rider Greg Smothers comes up at 9:20. Terry Meeks, John Velasquez at 9:40. 10 o'clock, it's In the Room with Sean Clancy. You're going to hear from jockey Dylan Davis. Kurt Becker stroll through racing history at 10:25. And then John Sadler wrapping up the show right around 10:40. This is the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at FarmPaint.com. That's FarmPaint.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Spanish Love Affair backed off after a mid-race move. She's fourth and needs racing room. Up on the outside, Cone Lima getting ahead of Lijana. Dropping back, I Get It. Designer Ready's been last throughout as they run to the top of the stretch. joy of painting, and Joe Bravo up to put a neck in front. Looking for room is Spanish Love Affair. She's got room now. She's loose and charging. Toby's Heart and Cone Lima are next with an eighth of a mile to go. Now here's the favorite, Spanish Love Affair, powering forward to take the lead. Cone Lima on the outside tries to get up into second, but the winner is Spanish Love Affair for Gary Barber and Mark Cassie by 2.5. Second, Cone Lima, close for third. Either Joy of Painting or I Get It in 1:41.1.
Close for third, it was not close for first. Spanish Love Affair running away with the Grade 3 Here Comes the Bride Stakes. That was back on February 27th at Gulfstream Park. It was her three-year-old debut. As you heard from Mark Cassie, that was Pete Aiello with the call. Owned by Michael Hernan, Gary Barber, and Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, Spanish Love Affair has really proven to be one hell of a bargain when you take a look at her sale price of just $35,000 as a yearling. She is now banked more than $127,000. She's 2-for-6 lifetime, including that Grade 3 victory, and she is looking to add to her totals later today in the Grade 3 Regret Stakes at Churchill Downs. That's race number 8, mile and an eighth on the turf, and good to see her back in action. Michael Hernan is with me now to tell you more about Spanish Love Affair and everything that he has going on with his new Michael Hernan Bloodstock Agency. Michael, good morning, my friend.
Good morning. Great to be back with you on a brisk, kind of gloomy day right now, but I like the temperature for racing later. It'll be in the high 50s and suits me better than 90. So excited about this filly, Spanish Love Affair. She had a tough go here in the Appalachian. She got slammed leaving the gate. She was basically eliminated. Jockey Chris Landeros took care of her and really just let her gallop around at the back. So she's had some time. She's been away 56 days. She's very well. She looks great. She's grown and lengthened. She's stronger. She's been here with Cassie assistant Alan Hardy, and his team have done an excellent job with her. And she went over to Churchill to David Carroll, Mark Cassie's assistant there, and she breezed well twice. So she's coming into this well. It's a very pivotal race for her, and we feel that she's going to give us a bold showing today in the eighth race at Churchill, post time 4:20 p.m.
Michael, you have been a believer in this filly from the very beginning, from the moment that she walked into the auction ring at Keeneland. And let's just walk back through what she has done in her career. She breaks her maiden at First Asking at Gulfstream by 11 lengths. She comes back in the Sharp Susan Stakes, and she wins that by a length and a quarter. She finishes second behind the ultra-talented Aunt Pearl in the Grade 2 Jessamine at Keeneland, comes back in the Juvenile Fillies Turf, and then wins the Here Comes the Bride to kick off her three-year-old campaign. Man, your belief and your faith in this filly has been justified in a big, big way.
Well, thank you. She, just going back a little before that, she was here at Keeneland in the September sale, and I gave Mark Cassie a push on the filly in the back walking ring. He looked at her. It was kind of with 30 seconds to go as she walked past him into the chute. Attractive filly. She had size and scope, quality, great class about her, great mind. And he looked at the book, and Mark said to me, I like her. And I said, well, if you buy her, I'll take half. And that's how the partnership initially developed. And after her maiden win by 11 at Gulfstream, we got a pretty good offer for the filly from Gary Barber and Aaron Wellman. And I decided to keep my half, which I still retain. Mark sold, and, you know, the filly then comes back, wins a stake in good fashion at Gulfstream Park. She comes here then to Keeneland and ran very nice behind the champion filly, turf filly of last year and Breeders' Cup winner Aunt Pearl. Yeah. So, you know, that was a real tough race for her. But this is a rangy filly who I think her best races are ahead of her. She was drawn wide in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf and compromised a bit with a longer trip, but she ran creditably. She finished sixth, and then she came back, as you mentioned, and won her three-year-old debut, the Here Comes the Bride. But It should be pointed out that there was some interference on the far turn, and after a 9 minute steward inquiry, the filly was taken down. So she is placed fourth there through disqualification. And then she had this tough run here in the Appellation. So this year it's been a bit tough for her so far, but third time lucky maybe today. We're looking for her to step up. She's trained well. She's coming into it well. She's a daughter of Caraconti, triple grade one winner, super young stallion, in my opinion. I saw him in Chanty, France, with Alan Cooper. I liked him immediately, and he's developed well physically. He stands a game's way, and this is a daughter, and she might be his best progeny yet. So we'll find out more about her today. And she is half to a grade one winner who won the American Oaks, namely Spanish Queen. She's out of Spanish Bunny. And I got into my car leaving here at Keeneland that night, turned on the radio, and they were playing the nice song Spanish Lullaby. And that's kind of what led me into naming her Spanish Love Affair. So it's an evolving story. I think she's an improving filly. And I think she'll give a bold run today in the Regret. And Regret, of course, was the first female ever to win the Kentucky Derby. She wired the field that day. Only three fillies have ever won the Run for the Roses, and the other two are namely Genuine Risk and Winning Colors. Regret herself was a top runner. She was a very precocious two-year-old. She won up at Saratoga. She won the Saratoga Special, the Sanford, and the Hopeful, and she wired the field in the Kentucky Derby, and of course is a Hall of Fame inductee, and she's actually buried on the former Whitney property, which is now Gainsway. So I've often driven past her gravestone, and it'll be terrific to have that tied into the career of Spanish Love Affair.
Talking with Michael Hernan, who, as I told you earlier, has now started his own bloodstock agency after spending 24 years as the director of sales at Gainsway. He's taken all that experience and all that success, by the way, and now doing it on his own through Michael Hernan Bloodstock. And Michael, Spanish Love Affair, I think you kind of have a bit of an Irish love affair with her, and rightfully so, because she is gorgeous and she has been really good, hoping to put it all together in the Regret tonight. She is not the only filly that you have had your eyes on that you have picked out at the sales and had success with. And there are many more going to be coming to buyers around the country as they start to take a look at the Michael Hernan Bloodstock consignments. Tell me more about what's going on with you.
Well, you know, it's a new day. Last year was a tough year. We had COVID. And then in July, I parted ways with Gainsway and sold a very nice filly in the September consignment out of the mare I'd purchased named Beloveda. And that was a quality road filly. She was bought by Bob Baffert and Donato for $1 million. And, you know, so she's a good prospect. And then, you know, I had great luck with the pivotal filly, Monomoy Girl, who I co-bred with Brendan and Olive Gallagher. And she, you know, we had bought the mare very right, signed the ticket at $80,000 for her. And we sold her back at Fasig Tipton, and she was bought by Bridlewood Farm with George Isaacs doing the bidding, and Summerwind Farm were the underbidder, and she made $1,850,000. So that put me in a spot to proceed with some of my own bloodstock investments. And, you know, that was preceded by breeding Zazu, the dual grade one winner by Tappet. So I've been lucky with fillies, and that's not to say that, you know, a good colt isn't on my resume either. But I'm doing, you know, bloodstock work. I was at the sale in Maryland. I got outbid on a very nice filly by Quality Road. I'll go to the June sale, have a good look around there. I did buy a nice filly out of that sale last year, who's now named Taken to the Cleaners. And she won her debut at Indiana Grand by 9 lengths. She's trained by Ethan West, and She's scheduled to possibly run back in an allowance non-winners of one next Saturday, June 5th, Belmont Day, at Churchill. She will run on the grass. Daughter of Secret Circle, looks like she wants to go long, and she's highly promising in my opinion. And then I've got a couple of pinhooks out of the yearling sales selling in June in the OBS sale. You got Hip 75, a nice Caracanti filly, and Hip 683 is a good daughter of Tonalist out of a top runner in Rapid Rhythm. So that's what's going on there. I sold a filly in Europe yesterday and the Arcana sale. And actually, in the additionally to Spanish Love Affair, I happened to have got lucky and purchased Calista. She was pregnant to Shackleford, her now two-year-old, sold very well in April. And she is the dam of number five in the regret, namely Barista, who races for Maya Comet Farm, Bill Harrigan and Partners, trained by Jimmy Baker. And she was a strong second recently in the Edgewood, grade two. So this makes this young Tappet mare a graded stakes producer. And Barista is going to run well today. She'll like the nine furlongs. And maybe she'll get on the board and get additional graded black type, or possibly they'll run one too. So fingers crossed for her too.
Yeah, it could be a very big day for Michael Hernan and his newly created Michael Hernan Bloodstock. And as you heard him say, he'll be busy at the sales coming up throughout the summer. Michael, I assume we're going to see you at Saratoga at some point too?
Yeah, well, it's an old favorite. I've been going there every year since I arrived in the U.S., and I'd hate to miss it. It's got great charm and charisma. It's great atmosphere. At this point, I know pretty much all the trainers and so forth, and it's an exciting place, and it's, you know, I love early mornings there and seeing the horses train into the top races, see them develop, and you know, it's as good a place as you could be here. It's got a strong European feel to it, and it's, you know, a definite no-miss on the calendar for me. And you know, hopefully I'll be there for both sales, the main yearling sale as well as the New York bred sale. And then maybe make a trip out to Del Mar and see the scene there a little bit. Bing Bush was here the other day at Keeneland and had a good chat with him. And then my friend Owen Harty is based out there training. And so, you know, again, know several people in the game based there, and a different scene. You've got the Pacific Ocean, and it's got a lot of its own charm. So hopefully this year I'll be free to be able to spend a few days on the shores there and see some good racehorses, and then come back in here for the main sale at Keeneland September, and, you know, in a different role instead of being at a barn selling under one banner. I hopefully will have some orders to buy and try and find some good value and some horses to breeze back and some horses to go onto the track directly and race.
Well, you can't do better if you're looking for somebody to represent you at the sale. I promise you that. Michael Hernan is the way to go. Michael, listen, I appreciate the visit this morning. All the best with Spanish Love Affair and all your horses later today. Let's go win a graded stakes at Churchill.
You got it. Thanks very much. Appreciate the time, and look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, all the best. Michael Hernan here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Spanish Love Affair, 5-2 on the morning line in that Grade 3 Regret Stakes. Post time, 4:22 Eastern this afternoon. Going to get to another break. Time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf. And then when I come back, today's first bet, Kevin Kirstein will be with me. He's the publicity manager at Churchill. He will walk through not just the regret, but all of the big races coming up at Churchill later today. So stay tuned for that segment. It all comes your way right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the amazing folks at Lexus of Lexington.
This is the story of an amazing thoroughbred who indisputably left his hoofprints firmly embedded in the documented annals of the American turf. He was iron-legged, stout-hearted, and spelled courage with a capital C. When he passed away at the age of 21 on June 24, 1962, at Haggard Farm near Lexington, Kentucky, where he'd stood at stud for his owners, the Beaver Jacobs Stables, a racing legend had gone his way. He was the son of equestrian out of Stopwatch by On Watch, was bred by the venerable trainer Max Hirsch, and was owned for a time by King Ranch. In 7 years of racing, from 1943 through 1949, he won 35 races and earned $918,485 for owner Mrs. Ethel D. Jacobs, and was the world's all-time leading money winner until supplanted by Citation in 1950. In the span of those unforgettable seven racing seasons, the durable veteran started 131 times. And, in addition to the aforementioned 35 wins, he had 35 seconds and 28 thirds in the money 96 times out of 131 starts, most of those being in the country's leading handicap or stakes races. At the age of two, he had three starts in a maiden race and two nondescript claiming events, all those while racing in the spangles of the King Ranch, for whom he earned nary a nickel and never finished better than seventh. An arguably forgettable start in racing, for sure. On June 2, 1943, at Belmont Park in his third start, he was haltered by trainer Hirsch Jacobs for $1,500. Jacobs had claimed him for his wife. In the balance of that juvenile season, he won four minor races while earning a composite $16,000. Out of 28 starts as a two-year-old, his biggest win was on November 10th in the Republic of Peru Handicap at Jamaica, for which he earned a paltry $3,440. He started in 10 claiming races that year in the colors of the Jacobs Stable. At the age of three, he started 29 times, won three, and placed 15 times, while earning slightly over $36,000. By this time, he had graduated from the claiming ranks and had won the Bolingbroke Handicap at Jamaica, but his best efforts were seconds in the Romer Handicap and the Wood Memorial. At four, this unlikely budding star began to bloom with nine wins and 19 starts, earning $225,000. At the age of five, he won 8 of 20 starts and earned nearly $239,000. At six, he was 7 for 19, banking nearly $300,000. At seven, he won 4 of 11 while earning $95,000. And in his final year of racing at the age of eight, he started five times and had a second and two-thirds, picking up about $7,000. When he reached the handicap age of four, he shunned neither distance nor weight. In that year of 1945, the last time the Chicago Cubs were in the World Series, by the way, he won, amongst others, the Saratoga Cup at 1 3/4 miles while toting 126 pounds, and the Pimlico Cup handicap at 2 1/2 miles while packing 128 pounds. In succeeding years, he carried up to 134 pounds and over 126 pounds 18 times. Among his wins were in the Rancocas, Greylag, Brooklyn, Butler, Continental, Saratoga Cup, Westchester Handicap, Riggs Handicap, Whitney, Edgemere, Manhattan, New York, and Gallon Fox Handicaps, the Metropolitan, Questionnaire, Massachusetts, Sussex, and Aqueduct Handicaps, and the Belmont Gold Cup. Racing analysts no doubt point to his victory in the Gold Cup at the age of six, when he stormed from behind to whip Natchez, Armed, Assault, Phalanx, Endeavor, and Ensueño as his single greatest win. He stood at stud in Kentucky for a few years and in California with excellent success. This absolutely remarkable legend of the turf, a true darling of the racing public, who graduated from the ignominious bottom rung of the claiming ladder to unparalleled greatness, was none other than Stymie.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Fans, join us for world-class racing here at Santa Anita this Saturday, Sunday, and Memorial Day Monday. On Saturday, we'll have a total of three graded stakes, the Grade 3 Daytona, the Grade 2 Triple Bend, and the Grade 2 Charles Whittingham. First post time on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday is at 1 o'clock. Our main event on Sunday is the Grade 2 Summertime Oaks, and on Monday, we'll have three Grade 1 stakes, the Hollywood Gold Cup for three-year-olds and up at a mile and one-quarter, the Gamely for fillies and mares at a mile and one-eighth on turf, and the Shoemaker Mile, that's all on Memorial Day Monday. Although Santa Anita is now open to the general public, please visit santaanita.com/open for reserved seating, as walk-up admission is not yet available. If you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's first.com/bet.
Pit Oak Studs Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
This week's Flair Fact is brought to you by Achieve Equine, maker of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. A horse has about 8,000 lymph nodes distributed throughout their entire body. Humans have only about 400 to 600. Lymph nodes clean and detoxify lymphatic fluid given off from blood vessels in the horse's body. For more Flair Facts, visit flairstrips.com/learn.
Hi, this is Penelope Miller, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
They bend across the track. All Bezos stand wide. Old Dog up the rail as these three-year-olds turn for home. Half mile at 46.05 seconds. With the tomorrow, it's Tate to reel in. But now they're deep in the final furlong and a half. Tate up by 3.5. Whiskey Double. Oh, Bezos bearing down now on Tate as they come past the 16th. And there's the Orpro with Brian Hernandez Jr. Oh, Bezos. Oh, Bezos bounced home by three. Tate was second. Whiskey Double third. Prime Spree finished fourth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was John G. Dooley with the call of that allowance win by Obesos at Fairgrounds on January 17th. It was a performance that opened several eyes and one that would put him on the Kentucky Derby trail. Of course, he finished fifth in the Derby. Credible effort behind Medina Spirit, Mandaloon, and Hot Rod Charlie. He is back in action later today in the Grade 3 Matt Wynn, looking to pick up his first win going around two turns. He's 2-1 on the morning line, and going to talk more about that race and all the big races coming up later today at Churchill with Kevin Kirstein. Right after, I tell you about a horse that you might want to keep an eye on the West Coast today. It is time for today's First Bet.
And now, today's First Bet.
Today's First Bet comes in race four at Santa Anita with a 5:41 p.m. Eastern post. It is number five, Ranim, 6-1 on the morning line, who has a 25% win projection from First Bet in a large 11-horse field. Rates 12 points higher than the next closest competitor. Ranks top two in five of the six most important First Bet factors for the race. Apprentice Jessica Piper is a top five rider at Santa Anita in May, and Ranim was the beaten favorite versus similar last out, which should inflate the price. Plus, Bob Baffert's recent cold streak also may create an overlay. Number five, Ranim, in race four at Santa Anita, is today's First Bet. And I'm back in 60 seconds to preview today's big races at Churchill Downs right after this word from First Bet.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Oh, just 1 week away from the Test of the Champion, the Belmont Stakes. Our coverage next Saturday comes your way, 5 o'clock Eastern, in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. We've been bringing you coverage of all the Triple Crown races. It continues in Elmont, New York, next Saturday. Make sure you join us here on HRRN. One horse that will be in the spotlight is juvenile champion Essential Quality. He went to the track this morning for trainer Brad Cox at Churchill Downs, and the plan was to go 5 furlongs. He did it beautifully, 59.2, and I know that because I got a chance to see the workout from Kevin Kirstein on his Twitter feed as he put it out there early this morning, and he's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Doing really well. I love that video, and the champ looked pretty darn good this morning, didn't he?
I'll tell you what, he's an interesting workhorse, being by Tappet. Sometimes the Tappets are a little funny when they work in the morning, and this morning was one of the better works that I've seen him. He breezed outside of Bonnie South, like you said, when 59-2 out 112-4. And I stood next to Brad Cox as he watched the work, and he simply said he's ready to go, and essentially he looks like that. It was one of his better works that I've seen in the last probably 2 months since he's come back to Kentucky after his winter breakdown at Fairgrounds. And so I think he's going to run a big race next weekend in the Belmont.
You know, Kevin, I threw out a question this morning to all of our listeners. I always like to include either a poll question or a question of the day with this show every Saturday morning. And the question is this: if you could go back in time and attend one Belmont Stakes, which one would you choose? I'm curious which one Kevin Kirstein might choose.
Oh, my gosh. How can you ask such a tough question like that? I mean, there's been so many of them. You know, I'm probably going to have to say, and I was very jealous of my colleague Darren Rogers when he got to go up there for American Pharoah in 2015, just because of the history that day. You know, I'm going to probably have to say that one, even though there's been some pretty historical ones back in the day, obviously with Secretariat and Seattle Slough and Affirm to win the Triple Crown at Belmont. But more recently, I fell in love with American Pharoah. I'm sort of a younger soul in the game, and so I'd say the 2015 Belmont for me.
Yeah, it's a great choice. I actually thought Rags to Riches beating Curlin would be another one that would be memorable, and it would be fun to go back there. I probably wouldn't pick that one because I was already there. But, yeah, something along the lines of, you know, Secretariat would be incredible. I'm getting a lot of Affirmed and Alidar responses to that question, and that's certainly a great one too. But people can weigh in at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and they can email me, mike@horseracingradio.net, to let me know their thoughts. Kevin, let's talk about the big night or big day today at Churchill Downs. It's Stephen Foster preview day. What, 7 stakes races, the 2 grade threes? What a program you put together.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal program by our racing office, who put together a solid 11 race card. And you said 7 stakes races today. You know, it's the preview for the Stephen Foster, which is going to be on closing day of the spring meet. $600,000 Stephen Foster winner in for the Breeders' Cup Classic. The prep race for that today is the $150,000 Blame, which features a pretty competitive field in that race with Night Ops, who's the 5-2 morning line favorite, also have Silver Dust and up-and-coming Sprawl. So very interesting field in race number 6, which is the blame. Again, the prep for the Stephen Foster, who Stephen Foster looks like it's going to be headlined by multiple graded stakes winner Max Field, who is skipping this race after winning the Ali Sheba on the Kentucky Derby weekend to go straight to the Stephen Foster. But along with those 7 stakes, gamblers are going to be chomping at the bit this afternoon because we have a mandatory payout in our 20-cent Derby City 6, which the carryover currently is at $150,655. That gets underway in race 6 at 3:18 p.m. Eastern. Mandatory payout in that low 15% takeout. And then because there were no winners in yesterday's late pick 5, there's a late pick 5 carryover today in race number 7 at just a little bit more than $73,000. So sort of a gambler's paradise this afternoon at Churchill Downs with all those carryovers, lots of stakes races, lots of high-quality horses this afternoon. And I can't wait to dive into this card this afternoon.
Yeah, we talked earlier, or I talked earlier with Michael Hernan, who is part owner, majority owner, actually, in Spanish Love Affair, who is the morning line favorite in the Grade 3 Regret. And he talked about the cooler weather, and that's always something that, of course, we don't like to hear at this time of year, but the horses love it. It's going to be in the mid-50s today, so perfect horsey weather, if you will. What's the turf condition and the main track look like over there at Churchill today?
The main track was actually pretty fast this morning. You know, obviously we had a couple of really nice horses work early this morning and work fast with Essential Quality included in that. And so I think the main track, especially with the breeze that's currently blowing out there, will be a pretty fast track this afternoon. The turf is officially labeled as good. We did get some rain in the area the last 48 hours and a couple of sprinkles when I walked into my office just a few minutes ago. But I don't think any of those sprinkles will be lasting any longer than the next hour or so. And so turf is labeled as good. The one thing to note is that the temporary rail does remain out on the turf course in lane 3 at 22 feet off the hedge. So usually when that rail remains out on the turf course, it tends to play a little bit more favorable towards speed or horses in that first tier of horses. So do note that for the turf condition, but is officially labeled as good.
All right, let's stick with the turf then, and tell me about the Grade 3 Regret. I mentioned Spanish Love Affair is the 5-2 morning line favorite in the field of 9. Really well-balanced race, though. If you take her out of the mix, anybody could win this thing.
Yeah, this is one of the most competitive races, I think, on today's program, and I think a lot of gamblers in that Derby City 6 and late pick 5 will probably be spreading in this race if they're not a fan of Spanish Love Affair, who she broke my heart 2 starts ago when she didn't really break my heart. She ran a great race, but then was disqualified in the Here Comes the Bride down at Gulfstream Park that afternoon. Really didn't run all that well after the start at Keeneland in the Appalachian. Did have a little bit of trouble at the start, but I think if she can run back to that Here Comes the Bride, she'll be very dangerous in there. A very competitive field, as you did mention. Down towards the inside, Oyster Box, who's a 3-year-old daughter of Tappet. She ran 3rd in the Florida Oaks 2 starts back against a pretty solid field that day, and I think she'll be a little bit dangerous if she can sit a trip with Chris Landeros aboard. You know, she's one of those that will probably have to lay a little bit closer than she did in the Florida Oaks that day because of the rail being out on the turf course as it is. So that'll be an interesting filly to keep an eye on. But, again, this is, I think, going to be the race for many gamblers that will probably be spreading in this race because up and down this field, you know, there are very well-matched 3-year-old fillies in here. And so, you know, I can see, you know, if you're not the Spanish Love Affair fan, who I've been in the past, but I think she's more equally matched against these horses today, it's going to be a spread race for a lot of people.
Yeah, you throw in Barista, who was runner-up last time out in the Grade 2 Edgewood. You have Flown from the barn of Brendan Walsh, 9-2 on the morning line, who just missed with Allowance Company last time out at Churchill. Gam's Mission has won 2 out of 3, those last 2 coming in succession for Gam's Mission. Really, really good race, Kevin.
Yeah, and I do have to mention that the 9 horse in here, Saranya for trainer Brad Cox, is the lone scratch out of this race, and so she is scratched out of the Regret.
Okay, field of 8 in the Regret, then. That is race number 8 on the program, as Kevin alluded to. Race number 9 is the Grade 3 Matt Wynn, 1/16 on that main track, which should be fast later this afternoon. Field of 8 was entered. We see a couple of horses coming back from the Kentucky Derby. That's always fun.
Yeah, it's very fun, especially when you see those horses that, you know, especially ones that have run well in the Kentucky Derby that then go in this Matt Wynn. And the placement of this Matt Wynn, which is a very competitive field in here, leads up to a lot of races that are here maybe locally in the Midwest in the next month to 6 weeks, including the Ohio Derby, Indiana Derby, things like that. And the 2-1 morning line favorite, Obesos, is likely using this race to launch him into either the Ohio Derby or go somewhere else in the Midwest after this race. He ran fifth in the Kentucky Derby and closed into that, you know, it was, I won't say a fast pace, but it was a solid pace. But you saw many of the horses in that first tier in the Kentucky Derby end up, you know, running in the top three, top four. And he was able to close some ground and just flattened out into the final eighth of a mile in the Kentucky Derby. And I think, you know, he's primed and ready for a big effort this afternoon. Trainer Greg Foley, you know, he mentioned, and you've probably seen in the headlines in the last, you know, 2 to 3 weeks, that he was pointing for that Ohio Derby, which is at the end of June. And this race came up, and Greg loves to run his horse at Churchill Downs, and I can tell you he's not going to send a horse that needs a race into a grade three stakes race like this. He worked 49, very easy half on Monday morning, and he's ready to go, I think, this afternoon. He's 2-1 on the morning line. Also see the Tampa Bay Derby winner in Helium breaking just to his inside for Mark Cassie and Julian Leperoux. We saw what you know, he was made of in the Tampa Bay Derby. Can he make a step forward after running eighth in the Kentucky Derby? That'll have to wait and see for that one. He's sort of been okay in the two subsequent works from the Kentucky Derby. Nothing really special that jumps out at the page, but he's been okay after running eighth in the Kentucky Derby. And then the new shooter on the scene, the number 5, Folsom, for Judd Mott and Brad Cox, who won the Oaklawn Stakes on Derby Day down at Oaklawn Park. He's sort of the up-and-coming Colton here, Buy Into Mischief, who really don't know you know, how big of a step forward he will take. He's obviously run against probably some lesser competition in his six race career, but, you know, if he can step up and sort of be on the improve, as we saw last time out in the Oaklawn Stakes, he could be very dangerous in here. But I think it's a very competitive field, and I think those three are probably the top three, which are, of course, the top three betting choices in here. But nothing real crazy for me in the, as a gambling perspective besides those three, but definitely will be very exciting to see a horse like Obesos come back after running fifth in the Kentucky Derby to see if he can finally break through and get win number 3 in his career.
Great stuff from Churchill publicity manager Kevin Kirstein here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kevin, before I let you go, a couple of days ago you had a tweet, which, by the way, if people want to follow you on Twitter, they can do it at Horse Racing KK. You had a tweet, and I guess, is that your daughter Josie that was with you at the baseball game?
Yeah, Josie broke her maiden to go to the baseball game, went to the Louisville Bats game. So 5 months old, already taking her out to the ballpark. She's sort of getting a feel before we go to the Phillies game this summer when I go back home to Philly.
The best part of that was the fact that you had her in the harness. She was strapped to your chest in the harness, and in your right hand, I don't know, is that a sausage and pepper sandwich? And in the left hand was a Michelob Ultra. Great picture, man.
I mean,
daddy,
I mean,
of the
how
year.
How can you do a baseball game better than, you know, a giant hot dog and a beer and a beautiful night for baseball? And so I had to get her started early, and she probably wanted to dig in. I don't know if she wanted to dig into the beer or the hot dog more, but she was eyeing them both up pretty good.
Yeah, beautiful picture, and she's absolutely precious, man. Appreciate you taking the time here this morning, and all the best later today with the racing action at Churchill, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Great to be with you.
All right, Kevin Kirstein here on HRRN. Yeah, fantastic. I mean, you've got the baby strapped to your chest. You've got the whatever it is. You got the sausage and pepper sandwich in your right hand, and you got the Mick Ultra in your left hand. Just Kevin Kirstein, Father of the Year Award right there for that picture. Fantastic stuff. All right, when I come back, I'll get you set for what promises to be a very busy second hour of the program. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, proud to once again be your home for the Kentucky Derby and for the Triple Crown.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care Products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
McK-
McKenzie, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKenzie was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKenzie scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKenzie is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKenzie. McKenzie holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKenzie is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKenzie. They've done it. McKenzie has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKenzie's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKenzie comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKenzie has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures, earnings over $3.4 million. McKenzie, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love listening to my friends on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
United takes the lead easily past the quarter pole as Synthesis surrenders. Originaire into second, Rock Emperor on the outside. United shakes free with a furlong to go, a length and a half. Originaire running on Gamely, as is Rock Emperor on the outside. Rock Emperor, Originaire, United. Desert Stone is trying to get a piece, and he's coming fast. Rock Emperor takes the lead close to home, and United knows and knows. Rock Emperor and United in an absolute tearjerker. Photo for third between Originaire and Desert Stone. It's very close for the win.
Frank Miramati with the call of last year's Charles Whittingham Stakes, and that was United getting the victory on Pratt. Flavian back aboard later today at the Great Race Place, and you're going to hear from Flavian to begin the second hour of the program this morning. That conversation coming up momentarily. Plus, Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. I'll visit with exercise rider Greg Smothers, who has been with trainer Niall Brennan now for about 35 years. And then toward the end of the second hour at 9:40, Terry Meeks, the president and CEO of the Jockeys Guild, will join me, along with Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez, to talk about the situation facing riders in New Jersey with the new whip regulations. Well, it happened again this past week. I stopped by the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore, and I've been telling you for months now that if you are into hunting, fishing, whatever it might be, stop by and see them. They do a fantastic job, and every time I go in, they're getting more and more product in. And had a chance to visit with John, who works in the bow department, spent some time with him, his son Nathan. Fantastic people. Just did a great job taking care of me and my wife Michelle. Walked out of there with probably way too much stuff, but hey, what the heck. They do a fantastic job. Their inventory is tremendous and owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. It's the Elite Outdoor Superstore. Even, you know, believe it or not, they have two indoor archery ranges. You can stop by and see them. They're in Nicholasville, Kentucky, just a few miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. All right, well, one thing that I wanted to try doing this morning. You know, I like to walk back through memorable dates in racing history. I thought we'd do that with you here this morning, too, to wrap up the first hour of the program. Well, how about this? As I was getting ready for the show, I noticed several notable dates in history over Memorial Day weekend. 124 years ago today, May 29th, 1897. How about that for you? Scottish chieftain owned by Marcus Daly became the only, ready for this, Montana bred to win the Belmont Stakes 124 years ago today. Also on this day in 1907, Colin began his undefeated career, breaking his maiden by two lengths at Belmont Park. And a historic milestone in racing on May 29th, 1946. Two-year-old fillies Chakura and Yuletta became the first thoroughbreds to complete a transcontinental flight. They were flown from New York to Inglewood, California by the American Air Express Corporation. It was a 2,446-mile trip that lasted 20 hours due to some adverse weather conditions. How about that? May 29th, 1946. Tomorrow, May 30th, you have some anniversaries there, too. May 30th, 1908, you had jockey Joe Notter, who misjudged the finish line of the Belmont Stakes, eased up on his mount Colin, whose career record to that point, by the way, was 13 for 13. But Notter recovered just in time from that mistake to hold off the drive of Fair Play, who came within a head of defeating Colin. Of course, Colin retired undefeated with 15 wins from 15 starts. May 30th, 1936, Omaha, the Triple Crown winner of 1935, won the Queen's Plate at Kempton Park in England for owner William Woodward. And, yeah, that's pretty much what's happening. Of course, you had Memorial Day, too. You had May 31st, 2001, when jockey Pat Day became the third jockey in history to win 8,000 races, hitting the milestone by winning the sixth race at Churchill Downs that day aboard Camden Park. And those are some dates to remember as you keep some things in mind over Memorial Day here. I'm going to get to another break. When I come back, it will be time for hour number two. That's right after I pause for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network. Welcome back. Hour 2 of the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Busy morning, too. If you missed any portion of the first hour, my interview with Michael Hernan or with Kevin Kirstein talking about the big races later today at Churchill Downs, all you have to do, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast. So many of you tuning into our podcast, too, really appreciate that. It's not just the Equine Forum. You've also got Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. This week was a really heartfelt show. Trainer Wayne Potts was my special guest for the full hour on Trainer Talk. You can go back and listen to that interview on our website. The Brisnet.com call-in show every Thursday is podcast for you as well if you miss it live. And the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts is up there too. That's where Anthony and Bobby Newman walk through all the big races coming up over the weekend and tell you their thoughts on who they like and who they don't like. So head over there now and listen to that show before you get ready to bet the races later today. It's all there, horseracingradio.net. Poll question today, or question of the day, not so much a poll question, but a question of the day. So many of you taking time to weigh in. It's all presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. If you could go back in time and attend one Belmont Stakes, just one, which one would you choose? Affirmed and Alidar getting some respect in here, and you can imagine that. Secretariat getting another one. Ann sends an email to the show and says that she would like to see Swale in his Belmont. Remember watching it on TV. That would be a fun one to go back and see. Secretariat. Of course, not, as Michael says, not an original answer, but Secretariat would be the choice for me. And 1978, Affirmed over Alidar to win the Triple Crown, is what Mark says. And that has been a popular choice. Affirmed and Alidar, because of that showdown, has been very popular. So let me know your thoughts at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. If you could go back in time and attend just one Belmont Stakes, which one would you choose? If you don't do social media, go ahead and email the show, Mike at horseracingradio.net. All right, well, Flavian Pratt is going to kick off the program for you. He's going to talk about United going to the Post later today, the defending champion in the Charles Whittingham. He's going to look back on his win in the Preakness, look ahead to the Belmont, and talk about his decision to hop off of the Preakness winner Rombauer and aboard Hot Rod Charlie in the Belmont Stakes. That comes your way in just a second. Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne, one of the more popular segments that we've introduced with this expanded show format, comes up at 9:20 Eastern. Stay tuned for that. Always a fantastic visit when I get a chance to honor those unsung heroes who make our sport a success. And today, I'll visit with Greg Smothers, the longtime exercise rider for trainer Niall Brennan. They've been together about 35 years. Some great stories coming your way there. And then at 9:40 Eastern, Terry Meeks, the president and CEO of the Jockeys Guild, will be joined by Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez to talk about the situation facing riders with the new whip regulations taking place in New Jersey. They officially went into effect yesterday on opening day of the Monmouth meet. So we'll talk to Terry and to Johnny coming up at 9:40. But Flavian Pratt, as I mentioned, did join me for an interview, and he looked back on the Preakness. He looked ahead to so many other things coming up, including that Belmont Stakes next Saturday. But he started by taking a look at that big win 2 weeks ago.
Hey, Mike, thank you for having me.
You know, 2 weeks ago, you added a second Triple Crown race victory to your already impressive resume. And let's start there. Take me back to the afternoon of May 15th at Pimlico and walk me through that big win with Rombauer.
Well, it was, as you can imagine, a lot of fun. Mike or Mike Carty and I, and his owners, we thought he will run a good race, you know. He was training great. There was, you know, two or three horses to beat, but I thought with the right setup and, you know, a good trip, we could run a good race, and he definitely did.
Did it go according to plan? Did you get the exact trip that you were hoping to get?
Kind of. I was hoping to get him, you know, off the pace and get him to relax, which is what he did. It turns out pretty well, yeah.
He gave you one heck of a closing kick. At what point did you know that you were going to catch and eventually blow by Midnight Bourbon and Medina Spirit?
Well, when we got to the 3-8 pole, I was right behind them, actually. And I was like, well, it's either, you know, I'm going to make a move and I'm going to go by them, or he's gonna get tired and stop, because he was traveling really well down the backside. So it was going to be either way, and he went by home, so it was great.
You had never ridden this horse before. It was your first time aboard Rombauer. How did you get to know him? What things did you do in the days leading up to the race to get to know the horse you were going to be sitting on in the Preakness? Mm-hmm.
Well, I rode against him a few times, I was on him for his last workout. So I kind of, you know, knew him with that, and of course I watched some videos of him and just to make sure I had the right, you know, the right idea of how he likes to be ridden and how he likes to run.
You mentioned running against him before. Can a jockey actually learn enough about other horses when they're riding against them that gives you some sense of what they're all about when you finally get a chance to ride them?
Well, it's never going to be the same as riding the horse, but you know, at least you get an idea of how he runs and what to expect from him. Yeah, I mean, you get a feel at least. It's better than nothing.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Very well said, Flavian Pratt here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Flavian, you now have two-thirds of a career Triple Crown sweep, if you want to look at it that way, after Country House wins the Kentucky Derby for you, and then you win the Preakness with Rombauer, now looking to complete the career Triple Crown sweep in the Belmont Stakes next Saturday. you had a tough decision to make. You took off of Ron Bauer, the Preakness winner, to ride Hot Rod Charlie, who finished third in the Kentucky Derby for you a few weeks back. Talk about making that decision.
Well, as you say, it was a tough decision. Obviously, right after the Derby, when I rode the Hot Rod Charlie, talked to the connection, and we thought going to the Belmont will be a good race for him. And then it happened that Ron Bauer won the Preakness. So, yeah, I was in a tough situation, but it's always a good problem. So we decided to ride the Hot Rod Charlie in the Belmont. I think it's all gonna matter of it's gonna be a matter of trip and setup for the race. So we'll see what happens.
What was the key factor that eventually led you to say, okay, it's Hot Rod Charlie in the Belmont for me?
Like I said, the thing is, right after the Derby, I thought that he would like the mile and a half. He trained like a horse who can run all day long. So it's really hard to judge those two horses in the sense where they're going to run in a distance that they never ran before, and they're probably never going to run again that distance. So it was not, easy to judge them on that, but I had to make a decision.
How much different is Belmont Park than the surface and the configuration of the tracks that you run over in the Preakness and in the Kentucky Derby?
Well, the Pimlico and Churchill are pretty much, maybe not Churchill, but Pimlico, it's usually speed favoring. But saying that, Ron Bauer was off the pace and he still won the race. So I think at the end of the day, it's dirt racing, and it's always better to be up close no matter what,
We always hear that, and I've talked to other jockeys about this too, that if you don't ride at Belmont all the time, it can be intimidating because of the big mile and a half oval.
Mm-hmm.
And then some jockeys talk about getting lost and making a move maybe at the wrong time. Is that something that will be in your mind, Flavian, as you're competing in the Belmont?
No, not at all. For sure you don't want to ride the same way that you ride at Santa Anita, for example. But in the meantime, I spent pretty much the first 5 years of my riding career in Europe, where the tracks are pretty much like Belmont, so I'm kind of used to those tracks anyway.
Yeah, what is it about Belmont that makes it so different? Is it just because it's a mile and a half?
Well, the turns are a lot longer. The track is just bigger itself. You can't move too soon. It's just a different track.
We talked about your trip aboard Ron Bauer in the Preakness. Walk me back through your trip in the Kentucky Derby with Hot Rod Charlie.
Well, the horse broke well, not well enough to make the lead, but he broke well and got me in a good position. We got a squeeze a little bit, in front of the grandstand, but that's usually what happened in the Derby. And then from that point on, I traveled really well. I was able to save ground. Turning form, I really thought I was gonna go by those two horses, and we never did. We just pushed them. But I thought it was a good run.
You mentioned the fact that he broke well, but not well enough to get the lead. Was that the game plan mm-hmm. going in? Did you want to be a little bit closer?
Not really. I mean, I want to be in a race, but there was no game plan where it's on the lead no matter what or any of that. No, it was just a matter of breaking well and getting in the race.
That's the other really unique thing about the Belmont Stakes is people kind of tend to think that it's won by a horse who comes from way off the pace because it's a mile and a half marathon race.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not usually the case. Yeah. You have to be in it early and up close to have success in the Belmont. Why is that, Flavian?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. But like I said, it's probably just because it's dirt racing. And dirt racing, usually you don't come from out of it. You know, you get a good position and stay there.
Yeah, well, listen, all the best in the Belmont Stakes. Can't wait to see you do your thing next Saturday. Should be a lot of fun to watch. And, of course, we'll have the exclusive radio coverage right here on HRRN beginning at 5 o'clock Eastern time. Let's shift gears and talk about the horses that you're going to be riding this Saturday afternoon. And you'll do that at Santa Anita. You've got mounts in three of the graded stakes, which are the Triple Bend, the Charlie Whittingham, and the Daytona. Let's start with the Daytona and tell me a little bit about Bombard, who you'll ride for Richard Mandela.
Ran really well last time. It was after a layoff. I think it's going to be should be really tough in that race. He has a lot of speed, and like I say, I thought it was a good run after a comeback, so hopefully he can improve from that race.
The horse you're going to ride in the Grade 2 Charles Whittingham is a horse that you know very well. He's the defending champion in there. That's United. Again, another Richard Mandela trainee. Tell me about this relationship you have with United.
He's a horse who improved a lot from, two years ago. He really improved a lot and from that point on, he became one of the best horses on the distance in California. He's always straightforward, always run this, a good race, and he's really fun to ride.
Only four horses in that race coming up on Saturday afternoon. Can you get in trouble in a four-horse field, Flavian?
Sometimes it could happen, but I draw the outside. I mean, we're going to try to stay out of trouble.
Is that being outside? I know it's only four horses, but even in a four-horse field, is that still a bit of an advantage?
That's all right. I think, when you break and at least you have the option of going or taking back if you want to. But he's a horse who's usually fully placed. He has a long stride, and usually you want to stay out of his way.
Talking with Flavian Pratt here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. One more stakes race to talk about Saturday afternoon at Santa Anita. That is the Triple Bend, a completely different race than the Charles Whittingham. This is a sprint race on the main track. Eight Rings is the horse you're going to be aboard. And much like Rombauer in the Preakness, you've never been aboard Eight Rings before, but it's a horse that is highly regarded, 9-5 on the morning line. Tell me a little bit about your approach to riding Eight Rings in here.
Pretty much the same as Rombauer. I rode against him a few times. I've been on him in the morning. He's training really well. I think he's going to run a good race. I really like him tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll find out. And, of course, you're on the outside there, too. So another – is it important to be on the outside in a sprint race, maybe more important in a sprint race than at a turf marathon?
Probably. It probably even more importantly, because at least you can break and, like I say, you either you go or you can take back, but you have the option. If you draw the inside, you want to break and kind of get in the race.
Flavian, how do you describe your riding style, or can you describe it? Can you put it into words?
Not really. I just try to, my whole point is to try to stay out of their way and, find a way they like to run. But it's not always happening. But I just try to keep things simple as much as I can.
Yeah, I mentioned the fact that you are closing in on 1,100 victories in North America and the fact that you came to the U.S. in 2015 and you had so much success before you came here. Could you ever imagine, though, you'd be sitting here looking at a Triple Crown sweep in just 6 years of being in the country?
Not really. Well, as I always said, when I left France, it was, you know, obviously to do better. But no, this is something that I never really thought about, to be honest with you. It's just to have the opportunity to be in those races and those weekends. It's so much fun. It's really I'm really grateful for that.
Well, you're a class act and one heck of a rider, too, and really appreciate the visit this morning, Flavien. Again, the Kentucky Derby in 2019 with Country House, the Preakness earlier this year with Rombauer, and now looking for the sweep in the Belmont Stakes. With three different horses, it would be a remarkable feat, and who else could pull it off better than Flavien Pratt? Flavien, appreciate the visit, my friend. Thank you so much, and safe trip every time you get a leg up.
Thank you, Mike.
My thanks to Flavien for taking time yesterday to join me for that interview. It was going to be a busy Saturday for him, so we recorded that yesterday, and just great stuff from Flavien Pratt here on HRRN. When I come back, it is time for this week's edition of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. Do not miss it. This is the Equine Forum presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
A five-time Graded Stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M. Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Grade 1 winner and track record setter Lee. Like their sire, his runners have excelled on both dirt and turf, including these standout performers.
And Dipping In will steal this one. Can you see it? Dipping In on top by a length.
Fastest in Queen Nakia. Here's the finish. Gibberish wins the treasure chest.
Out of a Galileo mare, this dual surface star has sired juvenile stakes winners on both dirt and turf. Lee, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The spring meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th. New for this year's meet will be the Stephen Foster Preview Day on May 29th with seven stakes races as we gear up for the June 26th Stephen Foster. And don't forget, new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with seven total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning You're In Fleur de Lis for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. With strong purses throughout the meet, you're not going to want to miss the spring meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters Champion.
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to eight, three, two, one. And for the eighth time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
And one of my favorite segments on the program is this unsung hero segment. My thanks to Claiborne Farm for making these segments possible. And now I get a chance to welcome in Greg Smothers, who is the lead exercise rider for trainer Niall Brennan. He has been in that position for roughly 35 years. It is a wonderful team. And last year, Greg was honored as the winner of the Dedication to Racing Award, which is presented by Godolphin USA. Those are fantastic programs and well-deserved for Greg Smothers. He is this week's unsung hero. Greg, good morning and congratulations.
Good morning and thank you.
Tell me a little bit about this relationship you have with Niall Brennan and how it all got started.
Well, it's a long one. I was working at one farm, just riding a pony and grooming, and I wanted to ride, and so I went over to the farm and I told now that I could ride, which I only had been riding like a month, but he gave me a chance and he saw where I had potential, and he kept me on, and that was at Kinsman Stud. And then he said he's going to move out on his own and asked me would I go with him. I said, sure, I'll go with you. And, you know, he had 12 horses. He didn't have many horses when he went out on his own. And then as gradually each year, got more and more and more, and it's, I mean, he's a good guy, man. He would do anything for anybody. He moved from different training centers because he wanted to buy one, and so he moved around to different farms. Then he found one, American Eagle. And he liked that one a lot because it fitted his program. And we've been there like 22 years now. And it works good. He's done a lot on there. But, yeah, me and Niall have a great relationship. And, you know, I love the job and I love the people that's there because they all work together. And it's a great job.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Talking with Greg Smothers, this week's unsung hero, presented by Claiborne. Greg, you started with the horses after you left your career in the military, and this is Memorial Day weekend, and I'd be remiss if I didn't thank you publicly for your service to this country. Really appreciate that, and it's another layer to your story. You were in the military before you got into the horses. Did you ever think when you were in the Army that maybe one day you might work with horses, or did this just come about after you wrapped up your career?
No, that came about after I got out. I come home and I couldn't find no work. And like I said, I went to this one farm and I was like really afraid of horses, but I was more or less working like maintenance. And the guy, he asked me that I want to ride the pony. And that's when I rode the pony. And then, but I never thought I would work with horses, no. And the thoroughbreds, I really was afraid of them because they're so flighty. But I got used to them. But, yeah, and I enjoyed it. And getting old now, but I enjoyed the journey.
Yeah, Niall mentioned that he has asked you a couple of times if you want to do something else with the operation as opposed to getting on horses every morning. And you told them, no, I love riding.
Yeah. But no, I it bothers me to see them riding. I can't, you know, it's just because I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah.
And I love breaking babies. You know, I just love breaking the babies. I love the way they progress. I like, you can hear them come in on the farm, they're screaming, you know, like, you know, all that, like that. And then we go through the steps, breaking them, and get them up to breathing, popping them out of the gates. And then when they leave the van going out, they're not screaming no more. They've all grown up. And I just like watching it, feeling it, you know. It's very exciting to me still, after all these years. I love it.
Tell me about a couple of the horses. Maybe there's more than a couple, but some of the horses that really stand out to you that you're never going to forget.
Ironicus, he's one of them.
Yep.
And I never could pronounce his name well. Pontedant Warrior.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What is it about those horses that stands out to you?
Those are the ones that stayed there. Because they're nice horses, very, very nice horses. And there's a lot more than that, but those are very nice horses. What is doing that anyway?
Yeah, they have proven that. I lost you there for a minute, Greg. I heard you mention Ironicus and was it Considine Warrior? I think was the other one that you mentioned. But who else stands out to you?
What did you say? Gunrunner. Did you get that one?
Yep, Gunrunner.
Oh, I said Arbs.
Yep.
And they had the spar. And you got Ironicus, right?
Yeah, and Ironicus, yeah. Yeah, I mean, those are all big names. But do you know, Greg, when you sit on top of them, you said you like working with the babies. Can you tell early on that they're going to be special, or does it take you a little while?
Well, that's some that jump right out at me. And there's some, like, if after a week or something, I'd to give them time, you know, and let them develop. And then once they get strong enough, then you can kind of, you know. Given time. But if some come in already, like, ready, I can pick them up quick.
Yep.
All I can do is sit on them and how they move, you know. Yeah,
it's incredible.
It's about sit on one. If he's got it together, you know, even as a young horse, you know. But then that's something that you sit on, you know you're gonna need time. Because I know
you've overcome your fear of horses to now be one of the premier exercise riders in the game. What's a day in the life of an exercise rider like?
Well, you know, we come in and check the set list, see what horses we got to get on. We go to that particular stall. The grooms, they brush them off for us, and we tack them up. They give us a leg up. We walk around the shed row a few times. We go out, and now have a little jogging ring before we go to the main track. So we walk around that until everybody get there. And then we jog in there. We now can watch for the soundness. We watch and look for soundness. And if they're sound, they go to the main track. If not, you send them back. Send them back to the barn and you check them out when you get back after we go around the track, after we train. And then we've been getting on, like, right now, 6 and 7, but you, like, in breaking season, we get on more than that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we do like 6 or 7 sets. We finish, clean our tack, clean the tack room. That's about it. Like if, you know, we'll hold a horse for a groom if he's having trouble, you know?
Yep. Yeah. But what do you like most about what you do for a living, Greg?
Riding. I have the love for the horse. I never thought I would. Never thought I'd get on one. Never thought I'd touch one. But riding is the. I just love all the horses. You know? I love all the horses, but riding is what I really love.
Well, as I mentioned, Greg Smothers has been with trainer Niall Brennan for over 34 years. It's about 35 years now that they've been together. Greg, before I let you go, Niall described you as being not an employee. He said you're much more like a brother to him. What does that mean to hear those words from a guy that you've associated with for so long?
Well, that makes me feel good because that's the way I feel towards him. Because one thing, we've been together so long and we know each other. And like I say, he know I will give, every time I get a leg up, I'm giving him 110% on my horse. And I know if I need anything from him, he would do that for me. So that's like a brother to me, you know?
Yeah, well.
But yeah. Yeah.
Greg,
it's been a long time.
It's remarkable, you know, you've gone from the military career to not knowing anything about horses to being scared of horses to now a 35-year career as an exercise rider, and I know there's many more to come. Safe trip every single time you get a leg up on a horse in the mornings, and really appreciate you spending some time with me this morning, letting people know about your job and your life and your career, and you are a very deserving unsung hero, my friend. Well done. Keep up the great work.
Okay, Mike. Thank you.
All right, great stuff. That is exercise rider Greg Smothers, this week's unsung hero. And it is such a privilege for me to be able to bring you those types of stories. And our sport is filled with unsung heroes like Greg. If you know someone that you feel should be recognized as an unsung hero in these segments, nominate them. And you can do that today by emailing their story directly to me, mike@horseracingradio.net. Many of you have taken the time to do that, and I appreciate it. mike@horseracingradio.net, and I will do my absolute best to recognize them during these unsung hero segments in the weeks and the months ahead. Fantastic stuff, and my congratulations to Greg Smothers, this week's unsung hero presented by Claiborne, and I am back right after this word from Claiborne Farm.
Undefeated Grade 1 winner Mastery was a multiple graded stakes winner at 2, including this victory in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity. At 3, he sizzled in the San Felipe Stakes. Now his progeny are bringing top dollar in the sales ring.
$450,000.
Internet buys, $510,000. Thank you.
An exciting young stallion, Mastery, standing at Claiborne Farm.
All right, coming up next, I'm going to talk with Terry Meeks, the president and CEO of the Jockeys Guild, along with Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez. They will do a deeper dive into this issue at Monmouth Park with the whip regulations. There are many layers to it. A new one that came out this week that I tweeted about. I'll tell you all about it next. This is the Equine Forum presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hey, horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick five, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick five, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick six. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Just 20 days remain until the return of live racing to Woodbine on June 18th. And in this week's report, Hall of Fame conditioner Mike Keough recalls his first ever win. I'll tell you about ones to watch during the upcoming meet. And we'll look back on Frank Catelli's big win in the 2020 King Corey Stakes. The first career win for Hall of Fame trainer Mike Keough came on August 1st, 1993. Clever Detector rolled to a 6.5-length victory on the Woodbine main track, returning 10-20 for a $2 win wager. Keough recently recalled that special moment, saying, "This was the first horse I ever saddled for Gus Chickendance. I was lucky. When I was an assistant to Roger Atfield and I passed my assistant test in Florida, the first horse I saddled for Roger and Kinghaven won. And then when I went to work for Gus, Clever Detector, the first horse I saddled for him, won too. That was the first of many for Mike Keough, and many more still to come." Jim Menzies of Oakville, Ontario, started his Piano Bar Ownership Syndicate just 4 years ago and has introduced family, friends, and business colleagues to the exciting sport of thoroughbred racing. Piano Bar had immediate success with its first yearling purchase, Red Cabernet, trained by Ian Black. Red Cabernet is back for the 2021 racing season and joins Menzies' newest arrivals, including Proud Speaker, the most expensive filly sold at the Canadian Premier Yearling Sale last fall at $82,000. The filly by Mr. Speaker was bred by the late Gus Chickendance. And we wrap up this week's report by looking back on Frank Atelli's big win in the $100,000 King Corey Stakes at Woodbine last September.
Frank Atelli has run them ragged so far in the King Corey Stakes out by 3 or 4 lengths, and they're battling for second as Frank Atelli has never been extended the entire trip. Frank Atelli, facile winner by 4.5 lengths.
And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
This is Greg Foley, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
And Lionheart just keeps rolling right along. He went 3/4 in 1/10 and 2. He's in front by 2.5 lengths at the quarter pole. My Snooki's Boy second. Rockhard 10 is third, and he's put to pressure. He's got to do better. Here comes High Prospect, and he starts to roll. But Rockhard 10 comes, and then at the eighth pole, it's Lionheart in front by 2. My Snooki's Boy is running another big one on the outside. He's coming to the outside of Lionheart. My Snooki's Boy second, running out of time. Here's the wire, and Lionheart has won the Haskell by a length.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was Larry Colmus calling that Haskell Invitational in 2004 at Monmouth Park. And the Haskell may sound a bit different this year, at least in terms of the riders that will be aboard the horses. Lionheart was ridden by Jersey Joe. Joe Bravo, a man who has won more than 5,400 races in what has been a stellar career. Joe is among the jockeys saying, "Nope, I'm not coming back to New Jersey this year. I will not ride at Monmouth as long as the new whip regulations remain in place." And he is not alone. I told you that yesterday, opening day at Monmouth, the entries were dismal. 44 horses were entered, only 14 jockeys willing to ride on the program. It was a 6-race program, and it's a story that has been evolving since September, when the New Jersey Racing Commission came out with the new ruling regarding the whip issue, the whip use during a race. I have the privilege now of being joined by Terry Meeks, who is the president and CEO of the Jockeys Guild, and Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez, also the co-chairman of the Jockeys Guild. Terry, Johnny, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, happy to have you both here. And I stated this earlier in the show, and I'll recap it very quickly for people. This is a story that, again, not new. The conversation began in September when the whip regulations were announced, but it took on a whole new layer this past week when jockey Nick Juarez, who is currently supposed to be serving a 6-day suspension handed down by order of the New Jersey Racing Commission Board of Stewards, showed up in the entries for today's races at Monmouth and for tomorrow, by the way. He's named to ride 7 today, 7 more tomorrow. The dates of his 6-day suspension were very, very clear. Friday, May 28th through Monday, May 31st, and an additional 2 days on Friday, June 4th and Saturday, June 5th. And the question I had, and I tweeted about this earlier this week, guys, did the New Jersey Racing Commission amend its ruling on Nick Juarez in order for this to be possible? And Terry, I'll start with you. I couldn't find an answer to that question. I still haven't found an answer. Have you?
No, other than what, you know, we heard through the grapevine that Monmouth Park was indeed involved in it and trying to get Nick to ride this, you know, this weekend. I've never seen a ruling like this ever change. You know, and they said that they received the amendment late that day before the entries were taken out. Jocks were taken off the horses that were named on the horses. I've never seen it, you know, and it goes to the integrity and credibility of the New Jersey Racing Commission and what Monmouth will do to, you know, to get the riders to ride, you know, whether it be threatened riders or, you know, doing whatever it takes to, you know, get jocks to ride. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, when you get one, Monmouth Park is basically, you know, threatened Tony Gallardo and evicted him. And it's, you know, we lost all integrity and credibility and, you know, and rules are not meant to be broken, you know. And I think there's other things that, you know, the New Jersey Racing Commission and Monmouth Park officials have done to, you know, not abide by the rule of racing. It's a shame.
Yeah, there's something that's just not adding up here. As they say, something is rotten in the state of Denmark, or in this case, New Jersey. I can't figure it out, and that's why I wanted to put that out there and see if anybody could answer that question. If New Jersey Racing Commission somehow amended its ruling on this particular situation with Nick Juarez. Johnny is a Hall of Fame rider and somebody who has ridden at Monmouth many, many times. You will again if this would change. Why is this situation so dangerous for riders and for the horses?
I'm gonna explain it. I think very simple, and I think the best way to explain it right now is playing Russian roulette. Basically, they are sending those guys out there with a loaded gun, with only one bullet, basically, you know. And when those guns start going off, it's gonna be very dangerous, though, you know, because you don't know when it's going to happen, though, you know, and when it does happen and the guns start going off and then people start saying, this was wrong. We couldn't do this, though, you know. So I'm afraid for that, though. I'm afraid that, you know, the way the rule is written, and if they actually go on and enforce the rule the way it's written and put in place, it's sending the guys over there playing Russian roulette, basically, you know. So it's dangerous.
How
Mike,
does
you mentioned
rule
about short fields, and thank goodness there was short fields yesterday because, you know, and thank goodness nobody got hurt, no horse or rider. And I think a lot of it's due to short fields, you know, so.
Yeah. If there are people listening right now that have not heard the specifics of the new ruling and they're going, okay, wait a minute, the jockeys are just crying over spilled milk here. What is this all about? Johnny, how does the new rule read, and why is it such a problem for riders?
Well, you know, this rules, you cannot even show the whip, you cannot tap the shoulder, so you cannot communicate with the horses to let them know that you actually are in command of the horse, though, you know, and let them know that you actually are the pilot. And this time, and the way the rule is written, you cannot do anything until the horse does something. So basically, the horse has to bolt or, you know, going to the outside or going toward the fence and inside for you to react. So, you know, that's the dangerous of the game. If you don't let the horse that you actually have command on the horse, they're going to take that very seriously, though, you know. And like I said, it's playing Russian roulette, though, you know. When they go, they go. And what we do is we try to anticipate and prevent most of the accidents that normally, you know, would happen, though, you know. So it's preventing is a thing here, though, you know. And here it's not preventing. Here it's actually reacting after the fact. That's what makes it dangerous.
Yeah. You know, the one thing, Mike, the state steward told Joe Bravo a couple weeks ago, even if you show the crop to the horse, you're going to be suspended. Not touch the horse, just show it to him. That's a form of encouragement. You would the jockey would be suspended for 5 days and a $500 fine, and that's for the first occurrence. Each occurrence after that would be doubled.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's gone beyond ridiculous, and as you said, it becomes a safety issue, not just for the humans that are aboard, but for the horses. And Terry, I always say there are two sides to every story, but the more we get into this particular story here in this particular situation, it seems like there really is only one side. And the, at least from my opinion anyway, the fact that, that this rule has been put in place, it really just makes it such a different situation there and such a dangerous situation at Monmouth Park.
No question about it. You know, and again, it's about to say, you know, let's go back 10 years ago. The Jockey Club approached the Guild and basically we asked the riders to change the poppers. Horses are not getting cut up or any welts. That's been for the last 10 years. It's been basically eliminated. You know, in the last two or three years, you know, the number of organizations and regulators have asked us to work on changing the perception. We've tried to do it. Johnny Velasquez and Mike Smith and other riders throughout the country have been out there trying to work out something to change the perception without risking the horse and the jockeys. And also consideration for the owners, the trainers, and the betting public. We came to an agreement last month with the Kentucky Racing Commission, which we think is a fair and the right thing to do for the safety of the horse and riders. And that's basically maximum of six times overhand during the course of a race and underhand as necessary from the 3/8 pole to the wire. And we thought, and we tried to do this with New Jersey and the Racing Commission and the horsemen and Dennis Drazen to, you know, try to use that rule and try to make forward going forward a uniform rule throughout the country, which we think is in the best interest of everybody.
I'm going back, Terry, before we continue. Like, remember, before this rule was implemented in Jersey, we went to the horsemen's group with Dennis Drazen and those, and we never got any help anyway. So this is where we are right now.
Right.
When you say never got any help, Johnny, what was the response that you received from Dennis Drazen, from the New Jersey Racing Commission, when you presented this proposal?
Go ahead, John.
No, basically they said the commission dug their heels in and they're not going to change it. You know, and the other thing we mentioned it to the Dennis Drazen and to the horsemen, and this is one thing we agree with Dennis Drazen. A year from now, the Horse Racing and Safety Integrity Act is going to be in place. They will probably most likely mandate a uniform riding crop. So why go through this process, what we're doing now, when a year from now it's going to probably be changed? And Johnny is on one of the safety committee, and just, you know, but the really trouble part is the regulators and racetracks haven't listened to Johnny Velasquez, Mike Smith, Joe Bravo. You know, when Johnny's ridden 34,599 horses and Mike Smith is 33,850 and Joe Bravo's 30,424, they don't listen to the jocks or respect, you know, lack of respect, but or care about their well-being. And that's, I can't say how, you know, unfortunate that is.
Yeah, what's really disturbing, and correct me if I'm wrong, this decision, this new ruling that is in place now at Monmouth Park and in New Jersey, was made without jockeys having a seat at the table. Is that correct?
Correct. We did respond in January of 2020 in the public comment period. They responded to their things, but really they had no input. You know, six weeks ago, that we had a commission meeting. We asked the day before, our attorney in New Jersey asked the day before, Joe Bravo and Nick Juarez wanted to talk, and that was refused. But at no time did they ever reach out to any rider to get their input.
Where do we go now? Where does this go from here?
There's no tell. It's really, I mean, until something drastically happens on the race or something like that, and then people start to thinking differently. Though, you know, you hope that nothing drastically happens. Obviously, you know, you hope that no one gets hurt or no horses get hurt. But, you know, it's a matter of fact, when that gun is going to go off.
Yeah, it's a dire situation, and again, we don't want to see anything happen to horses, anything happen to humans, and let's keep this in mind, guys, as we're talking about this particular situation. Terry, you pointed out earlier that the riding crops that are used now are much different than what was used in the old days with horses. And nobody wants horses to be abused in any form or fashion. We all love the horse, but it becomes an issue of needing that in your hand to be able to control the horse during a race. And Johnny, I'm sure there have been plenty of times over the years that if you had not had that in your hand and you could not have used it in the way you needed to, you might not be sitting here today.
Absolutely. And somebody else too, next to me though, you know, so it's not just about my horse. It's how many horses I'm going to take off with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Terry Meeks, John Velasquez, president and CEO of the Jockeys Guild, is Terry Meeks, and Johnny, the co-chairman of the Jockeys Guild, Hall of Fame jockey. Gentlemen, really appreciate the visit and getting into this issue with me here this morning. Let's just hope things can be resolved in a timely fashion and we can start moving forward from this issue, because it's not going away. And as Johnny said, it's only a matter of time, and we just keep our fingers crossed every time the horses leave the gate that everything goes well. Really appreciate the visit, guys.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, Terry Meeks, John Velasquez here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, that is not a good situation by any stretch of the imagination. And when the Racing Commission in New Jersey put this rule in place in September, immediately the riders and so many trainers and owners, it's not just about the jockeys, the trainers and the owners too, really got into it and said, wait a minute, we're not going to run our horses there. There are plenty of people that will, but there are so many more that are not going to now. And it's you just heard why. It is not a good situation. It needs to be taken. And it's another example of racing not working together on a united front to put together a program that will work for everyone. It's just very disappointing, and let's hope that it gets resolved quickly. When I come back, I'll get you set for the third hour of this program. With you right up until 11 o'clock Eastern, that third hour includes trainer John Sadler talking about Rock Your World, getting ready for the Belmont next Saturday. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, proud to once again be your home for the Triple Crown.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. They're off in the Preakness. They're off in the Belmont Stakes.
You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Fans, join us for world-class racing here at Santa Anita this Saturday, Sunday, and Memorial Day Monday. On Saturday, we'll have a total of three graded stakes, the Grade 3 Daytona, the Grade 2 Triple Bend, and the Grade 2 Charles Whittingham. First post time on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday is at 1 o'clock. Our main event on Sunday is the Grade 2 Summertime Oaks, and on Monday, we'll have three Grade 1 stakes, the Hollywood Gold Cup for three-year-olds and up at a mile and one-quarter, the Gamely for fillies and mares at a mile and one-eighth on turf, and the Shoemaker Mile. That's all on Memorial Day Monday. Although Santa Anita is now open to the general public, please visit santaanita.com/open for reserved seating, as walk-up admission is not yet available. If you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's first.com/bet.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune in to Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
Get in-depth handicapping advice on the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman look forward to all of the weekend's biggest stakes races and break down each one with expert analysis. Get a jump on the competition with the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, Fridays at 6 on Sirius 219, XM 201, or streaming at horseracingradio.com.
This is jockey Julien Lepau, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Well, winding down the first 2 hours of the Equine Forum this morning, still plenty more to come. Hour three begins with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy, a special In the Room classic, as Sean visits with jockey Dylan Davis, getting ready to make his comeback from injury. Plus, Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history and trainer John Sadler talking about the Santa Anita Derby winner Rock Your World at 10:40 Eastern. If your station is leaving us at this time, continue listening on SiriusXM Satellite Radio, ESPN 680 in Louisville, and horseracingradio.net. I'm back right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is HRN.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby! Mandaloon was second, Hot Rod Charlie was third, Essential Quality was fourth.
He seems to move forward off the Derby. His weight's great, his energy level's great. You know, just happy with everything we've seen post-Derby. He's had two works. He had a fantastic work this past weekend. His first work was by himself, just a easy half and 50. Did a little bit more with him this past weekend, responded well, and we're looking to go a 5/8 with him on Saturday at Churchill, and if all's well, on to the Belmont.
I think with Hot Rod Charlie, one of the beauties of him is he's so versatile that I think having the continuity of Flavien Pratt ride him back is huge, and Flavien can just play the break, and you know, in an ideal world, probably not the only one thinking this, but you know, if we got an easy lead, that'd be a beautiful thing, but he has shown in the past that he can lead all the way or come from off the pace, so I think we got options.
It is now Rambauer storming to the front, taking over from Midnight Bourbon. Medina Spirit has dropped back. Keep Me in Mind is fourth. Rambauer and Flavien Pratt win the Preakness.
A lot going on, obviously. It's a little bit overwhelming, you know. It's always nice to win a big one, but when you win one like that, I got to tell you, it's been a little bit overwhelming. But we're a little over a week out to the Belmont, so it's time to kind of tighten the screws and concentrate on what we've got ahead of us. This horse is proven to be effective wherever he goes, on whichever surface it is. I'm very pleased with what I'm seeing from him. His weight is good. His attitude is great. He's had a couple looks around the main track. He's done some training on the training track at Belmont. He's had two solid days over on the main track. He's been to the paddock. So he's fallen nicely into a routine here, and we're expecting a nice little solid piece of work from him.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour three of the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com. Mike Pena with you on this Saturday morning. Thanks for staying with me. Plenty more to come in this third hour of the show, as I told you moments ago. You think there's going to be a few good storylines surrounding this year's Belmont? Yeah, you betcha. That open you just heard, really, really just scratching the surface. You have Preakness hero Rambauer squaring off with so many fresh contenders, like juvenile champion Essential Quality, who worked this morning, by the way, for Brad Cox. 5/8 and 59 2/5. Looks like all systems are go for the champ. Hot Rod Charlie, who was third in the Kentucky Derby, and, of course, the always dangerous Todd Squad. Todd Pletcher, the recently crowned Hall of Famer, getting ready to send out several horses, including Known Agenda, the Florida Derby winner. There will be plenty from Todd, and you'll hear more about those horses coming up throughout the week on our programming here. Don't forget, our coverage next Saturday of the Test of the Champion begins 5 o'clock Eastern in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. We'll bring you that exclusive coverage as we've done for each of the first two legs of the Triple Crown. And even though there is no Triple Crown on the line next week at Belmont Park, what a setting it is. That daunting, mile-and-a-half oval that's known as Big Sandy, and those horses trying to prove that they can get that type of a trip, that distance. And, you know, I talked about this earlier with Flavien Pratt. You heard that interview at 9 o'clock Eastern. I asked him about the running styles of horses in the Belmont Stakes. You typically think, okay, mile and a half, marathon, it has to be a horse that comes from way out of it. That is not the case. Usually the horse that wins the Belmont is a horse that's in the mix early on or goes wire to wire, like we've seen with American Pharoah and Justify, for example. You might see the same thing this year, too. Rock Your World, John Sadler is going to be with me at 10:40 Eastern to talk about Rock Your World. He lost all chance at the start of the Kentucky Derby 4 weeks ago, and he is hoping for better next week in Elmont, New York. But he's a horse that has the early speed. Can he carry it that far? Well, we'll see. Hot Rod Charlie has some early gas. Can he carry his speed that far? And who can sit the perfect trip? That's what it comes down to. Maybe it is a horse that comes from far. Maybe it's a Bourbonic that comes storming home this year. But that is not usually the recipe for success in the Belmont Stakes. Again, so many of those questions, the storyline is going to be talked about and answered next week for you here on the network, and certainly next Saturday with our exclusive national radio coverage. You can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to see a listing of Belmont Stakes affiliates and to, of course, listen worldwide at horseracingradio.net. All right, well, I got so excited when I introduced Flavien Pratt and did that interview earlier in the show that I forgot to mention that he is this week's Industry Star of the Week, and that interview was brought to you by Stuart Morris, and Stuart offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and recent 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gal and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is absolutely your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. All right, here we go. Hour number three begins with a special In the Room Classic. Sean Clancy took time a few weeks ago to sit down with jockey Dylan Davis. Dylan making his way back from injury, scheduled to ride again this weekend. So I thought it was appropriate that we bring you this conversation again. It will be followed by Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History right around 10:25 Eastern. And then again, John Sadler at the end of the show at 10:40. Here it is, In the Room with Sean Clancy.
And he did it again. Dylan Davis. Dylan Davis. It's a sensational.
Sensational.
Six-win day for Dylan Davis.
For Dylan Davis.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Dylan Davis. The New York native has registered 818 wins for over $41 million in a career that began in 2012. The son of jockey Robbie Davis, a winner of 3,382 races in a storied career, Davis, like his dad, has staked his corner in the tough New York jocks room, winning over 100 races in each of the past three seasons. Welcome to the show, Dylan.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks for having me.
You were rolling this year, 35 wins through March 20th before breaking your collarbone in a spill at Aqueduct. I mean, you had won two on the day, including the Cicada. How are you feeling now?
I'm doing better. Just really anxious to get back.
Yeah, what's this part like? I mean, what's it like to get injured physically? I know you're hurting, but then sometimes the mental part can be worse.
Yeah, this is actually my first real injury that I've had. I've had some bruised bones and dislocated my shoulder once, but nothing that's really set me out of racing this long. You know, I really can't do much right now, but I'm just really anxious to get back riding. It's just, I really miss sitting on top of a horse.
Yeah, mentally, what's it like to go from riding? I mean, I think you rode 9 that day, and then all of a sudden you're solitary sitting in the house. What's that like?
It's not good, because I've been doing it every day since, like you said, since 2012. I've been at it, going full force and nonstop. Definitely very weird for me. Just can't do much. I got a lot of energy and I can't get it out. So I'm just happy that I'm home with my kids. I didn't really get too much time to spend with them, and now I do, even though I'm broken and I can't do much with them. But just being with them is very nice, and my family. So just going on some walks and just watching them have some fun and stuff.
Yeah, that's nice. You got to enjoy those moments. And what's the prognosis? When will you be able to get back on horses?
I will be looking maybe like in the middle of May or maybe a little bit before that. I should be ready to go.
We're looking forward to seeing you come back. Take us through that fall. I mean, there was two other guys, Nick Juarez and Nori Vargas. What was that like, you guys? I mean, the moment you're hurt, but those guys are there right around you. What's that like? I mean, as a guy that you're competitors, but you're also comrades. What's that like looking around and seeing those guys hurt next to you?
Yeah, I remember every part of it. I'm just saving ground. I'm in the two path, and I'm tucked in right behind George Vargas Jr. And all of a sudden, I saw his horse kind of, like, lose a little action. So I wasn't really sure what was happening. Maybe he tried to jump or tripped or something. And I said, well, that's not right. So the next jump that horse took, the whole body started lowering. And what ended up happening is the horse ended up having a heart attack during the race, unfortunately. Wow. And I did see the horse actually lower with him, like, about a foot. And I said, well, now there's something wrong going. And the horse started lowering a little more, and I said, okay, this is no good. I was right behind him, and maybe I gave myself a little half a length. So I was maybe a half a length off of his heels, pretty close to him anyways. And we entered that turn, and the horse started doing that and dropped. And I was able to react very quickly. I was paying attention, very sharp. I was able to get out of the way, and I was clear, but his horse ended up doing a full somersault. And by that, we were in the turn, the horse's legs pretty much tripped up my filly's legs and causing my filly to go down and me too. And I landed straight on my left shoulder. And at that point, I was laying down and I knew something was wrong right away. I ended up being able to sit right up, thought that the wind was knocked out of me. It was really hard for me to breathe. And right away, my whole shoulder was burning. And I said, something's wrong. I just don't want to move. I'm not moving. I could hear George Vargas behind me moaning, and I heard Nick Juarez was up and okay. He was checking me. It was very nice of him to check me and check Georgie. Just had the outriders coming to us, medical team, asking us if we're okay, and I knew something right away was wrong with my shoulder, and the collarbone was broken.
Yeah, I've broken plenty of bones, and people who haven't broken bones, they say, how do you know it was broken? And I'm like, well, believe me, when you break something, you know it's broken. Is that kind of how it felt, right?
Yeah, this is my first break ever in my life. I'm very, actually,
wow, I'm
gonna, very
I'm
lucky
gonna touch
to get
wood
this
here.
Far.
I'm touching wood on yeah, for you for that.
This sport, I'm very lucky to get this far, and I know I'm very lucky. I just knew right away. It was burning. It was just on fire, and I've actually had one of the medical team ask me to move it, and I said, no, I already know I can't move it, and I didn't even try to move it, and I knew I couldn't move it. And right then and there, like you said, you just know it was broken.
Take us back to the beginning. Your dad was a jockey. What was that like for a kid? I mean, were you in all of his career and always interested in it? I mean, were you always kind of wanted to be a jockey? What was that like for you?
No, never really had interest in being a jockey. I was just enjoying being a kid. When dad retired, I was about 8 years old. I just remember just running around and playing on the track, and I never really had a lot of focus on the actual racing, just being a kid, pretty much.
When did that desire start? When did you, do you remember a moment when you think, wow, I really want to do this? Was that just growing up on the farm in Saratoga, or what was that like?
Yeah, I was messing around with motocross, dirt bikes, and I was racing locally upstate Saratoga, and there was a time where I outgrew the age group that I was in, which was like 13 to 15 years old, with my size bike that I had. And I told dad, I said, I want to still compete. I need a bigger bike to compete. And he says, I was 16, so I just got out of that group. And he says, no. He says, I don't want you to get a bigger bike. I said, why? Why can't I get a bigger bike? I want to keep racing. I love this. I love doing it. He's like, well, that means you go faster, you do bigger jumps, and you're going to get hurt. He's like, no. He says, find something else to do. And at that point, I was in my junior year of high school, and I'm like, I don't know what I want to do. I was doing wrestling in the winter time, and I needed a summer thing to do. And I just thinking about it, I'm like, I'm going to have to start getting on some horses. I was born with this. I have dad right here. He can help me out. and I was pretty much born to do it anyways. I loved horses. I loved horses my whole life. I just never really got interacted with them until later on, around 16, 15 years old. And I was just messing around with the pony and jogging. Luckily, Dad was training himself, so I was able to get one-on-one, coaching from the beginning.
Wow, he's a great coach. And did he ever try to talk you out of it, or was he always 100% supportive of you being a jockey?
It's funny that you say that, because he was 100% behind me, but when one of my first siblings started riding Jackie, he was not for it at all. He just knew, because he knows about all the dangerous, spills or what you have to go through to become a jockey. And he was 100% behind me, and even to this day, he's still critiquing my rides, which is great. I love the support to get better, but right from the beginning, he was all for it. He never wanted to push me away from the sport.
Wow. And how often do you hear you look just like your dad on the horse? I know that was the first thing that struck me. You were galloping horses, I think, for Wesley Ward at Saratoga, and I actually saw you cross the road, and I looked, and I was like, that's Robbie Davis. I mean, that's a young Robbie Davis.
Oh, yeah. I can't count how many times that's happened. I never had the chance to watch him, race or remember, how his style was when I was that young. It's hard for me to remember, so I have to go off of, race replays or YouTube and watch, his big wins and all that stuff. But I've never really actually tried to mold myself the way he's ridden. It's just natural. It's just because of the genetics or whatever, the way I look. Like how he does on the horse.
Yeah, and I mean a young Robbie Davis, not the. I'm not picking on him, but not the Robbie Davis in those big hiking boots he gallops in now. not that Robbie Davis. I can say that because I'm friends with your dad, but I mean the young Robbie Davis.
Really become a country man up there once he retired. He's really taking full to Saratoga Springs on him. He loves it up there.
I love it. So who do you watch, Dylan? I mean, who are your mentors, your idols growing up or even now, guys that you try to emulate?
Right now, I've been watching a lot of Joel Rosario. He's just an impeccable rider. I really get a lot from him. He's got a lot of timing, and I don't know why he's so far back in the races, but it's just because he has so much horse. And I see how once the races really develop, just an unreal rider, very strong finisher down the lane, and I just try to mimic him myself.
Yeah, I always say that there's jockeys who ride that they ride like they were the first to know they were going to win the race, and then there's riders who ride like they were the last one to know they were going to win a race. And Rosario is definitely in the former. The way he confidently rides, the way he waits, he's empathetic to the horse. They never get, he never overdoes it. No matter how hard a race, it's probably just a little bit easier with him because of the style he rides, and it's something that I think a lot of young riders could pick up from when you watch him.
Of course, yeah. You just have a lot. I need a lot more horse to work with to be real Thompson to come from out of the clouds like he does. But when I do, though, he'll definitely make it a lot easier.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the bottom line is what you're riding. I mean, when you're getting on those, confidence builds confidence. When you're riding good horses, you start, that confidence grows. I mean, I'm sure you can feel that way when you're rolling, you start just making better decisions and ride more confidently. Then it's more instinct, right? I mean, that's kind of what you're going for.
For sure. Once you get on a roll and start winning races, you get a lot more, confidence and I can do this attitude. And you always have to have that. But it just even more overlaps when you keep winning races daily or weekly, and even stake races. You just feel like, okay, I got a good feeling for this. And then overall, just year after year, you get a lot of good feel about what you're sitting on and when to move and how the scenarios show up and what you have to do. And you just get – it's just over a period of time riding and just all that confidence is just really takes time.
And people you talk to, I mean, guys like Richard Migliori and people like that, they must help you with that and that kind of approach. Guys that have done it before, your dad, and people who can be mentors for you.
Of course. I'm very lucky to have my father just being at top level racing that he's been competing in New York, and also Richard Migliori also. These two guys combined, almost 8,000 winners. To have those two guys behind my back in my corners is really special. And I definitely listen to them. I have to listen to them, and they didn't win all those races for nothing.
Are they ever hard on you? I mean, do they ever give you grief or give you, I mean, do they ever pull you up and say, hey, that wasn't good enough or you're doing this wrong? Or do they kind of, you know, hammer on you a little or not really?
Not my dad too much. Maybe it's because it's a father-son relationship, so he doesn't want to be that hard on me, but I definitely get that from Richie. He's really, really hard on me. And sometimes I don't like it, but when I take a second and sit back for a second, he wants me to do good. So I have to take that criticism and turn it around and use it. And once I use it, I know he wants me to do good. I have to listen to him. Even if he tells me I screw up a ride and I don't like it, I have to keep moving forward and learn from that, whatever mistake I make, and remember and don't make it again.
Right. What's the biggest thing that he tells you or gets on you about?
Positioning for sure. He's really hard on me about, you know, coming out of the gate in that first eighth or quarter of a mile, about, you know, how long to let him run out or where to be. And then the second most was saving ground and being patient. Know who you're around with. Make sure you do your homework. And once you know what horses you're with, you get that confidence that, okay, that horse in front of me is not going to be up there at the eighth pole, so I can't be behind him for much longer. You have to find something else. And doing that handicapping will give you more confidence in the race.
Right, exactly. And I'd say Mig was, that was really one of his specialties, was to break and get a position. He would get there. He rode for guys like Mike Hushin that wanted horses close, but he was very good at that. Kind of get a position. They always say get a position while going forward, right? I mean, that's the art of being a jockey, right? You don't want to get that position while taking back, because that's actually not a position. You want to take that position going forward. That's something that's crucial.
That's the number one thing that he's instilled into me is, and it's not easy, as like we're talking about. It's definitely not easy to, you know, say and do it. It's definitely tougher than you think.
Yeah, don't feel bad, because he used to give me the same lecture, and I was going 2 miles. He said, "You got to get in the race, get that position, get inside." All right, that's it, man. I got to a point where when I was riding well, I said, "Okay." When in doubt, be third on the inside. You know, if your horse isn't a front runner and he's not a stone cold closer and the pace is average for the race, right? You just try to be second, third on the inside. It seemed like that's where I won a lot of races.
Yep.
And who's the toughest jockey to get past? When you're turning for home, you think, oh God, it's X, Y, or Z here next to me. Who's tough?
Well, I would say Joel, because he's one of my idols anyways, but he always comes from the clouds.
Right.
So if you see him coming, or he's up, if he's on the lead sometimes, and if he's on the lead and he's sitting chilly, he's one tough man to pass. But I could say, if you're saying a guy that's on the lead and he's hard to pass, it'd be like a Luis Saez for me, or Johnny Velasquez. When they're up front, they always seem to find more. I feel like Luis Saez is more one of the toughest guys to pass if he's on the lead. He just always, I don't know what he does. He does a lot of hand riding or throwing the reins action, but those horses really pick that bit up, and he really finds that little extra all the time. He's just really tough to pass.
Yeah, he's strong. He's like a little ball of muscle, right? He really gets those horses running or something, right?
He has that, like, he's a short stature like me, but he has that, like, center of gravity where he's right with them. And he's really pushing them forward without really getting in their way. He's more of a hand guy than like a European style where you're rocking.
Yeah.
He's more of a hand style rider, and he's just really tough.
Right. And Johnny's got to be difficult because he's such a good judge of pace, right? I mean, if when you get to him, he hasn't misjudged the pace. There's other guys that are easy to pass because they might have been doing more than they should have the whole way, but Johnny rarely does that.
Yeah, Johnny is a very good rider. I mean, everyone could say that. But he really manages his horses very well. Like Richie says, he gets very good position going forward. And then after that, he's very good manager between that middle race and knowing when to move or knowing when to wait for a horse to come up to him and he'll use his horse again. He just knows he's a very well manager of the horse. And saving the horse's energy.
No doubt. And is there a race in your career you want back? I mean, one that you just think, oh, God, I'd like to ride that one again.
Yeah, I was just recently for Clement in the Maddie May Stakes. I was riding a filly
for him, and I was on the lead, and the rail wasn't that good that day, I wouldn't think, but some people say otherwise. But I did come off the rail, just a pass. I mean, maybe two. And Eric Cancel ended up trying to slip up on the inside, and I heard him, and I was definitely made it tight on him. But if I did any more, my number would have probably came down, so I did have to hold my line after that because he was already a quarter of the way in there at the eighth pole. And I just say that if I just stayed on the rail, it would have never came to that point, and I would have probably won that race, the most recent race for sure.
Sure, yeah. And the best one, what's the best ride you've ever given a horse?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. First stake winner or winning from my father, but I have to go to my favorite horse of all time right now is my Pat on the Back New York bred, because when I won a lot of New York bred races with him throughout his career, but he won an open, the Kelso handicap, grade two. He stepped up to open class and he won that race. And I was just very happy to win with him. And he's done open company before, but you know, this was more towards his later career. He won the Kelso, and I was just so happy to win with him. We built a like special bond together, and since the beginning, I've ridden him as a two-year-old in his whole career. I maybe had sat off of him maybe like three or four times because he shipped out of town or whichever. Kenny McBeak took him somewhere else but for the Kentucky Derby Trail. But other than that, I pretty much ridden him his whole career. And I just feel like through his career, he pushed me forward to where I am in New York because we've won the New York Breds and all these stake races. He's just a special horse to me.
When you look back at your success, how much of it is luck and how much of it is hard work?
I think it's all hard work for me. I definitely luck comes along the way with race riding and stuff, but all of it is, I would say all of it is hard work. I put a lot of time in the mornings for where I am today. And I just really think that it's gotten to me where I am today for sure. And I'm not going to stop. It's just, I don't think I've ever had anything handed to me like that. I'm just trying to find that really one big horse to break through. I just want to be in that top tier group where I'm riding stake races and riding those big races. So, and I'm just trying to learn from the best, and I'm riding with these guys in New York year round. And I'm very blessed to be doing that.
You're getting there, kid. You're not too far off. I mean it. I think other people see it. Your work ethic and your talent is coming through. And I think you're a big horse away from really breaking through that stardom. And, we have enjoyed watching your career, enjoyed watching you work hard and make it the way you have. And we look forward to seeing you back. We're disappointed you got hurt, and I know you are disappointed that you got hurt, but we look forward to seeing you come back and hopefully see you at Saratoga.
Thanks, Sean. So I really think that this injury, you know, staying with my family and stuff, will put me even more drive to come back stronger for sure.
I have no doubt. That's Dylan Davis. All the best, Dylan. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Sean.
And it will be great to see Dylan back in action later today at Monmouth Park. He is named on several horses today and several tomorrow and Monday as well. So it will be great to see Dylan back in action. And my thanks to Dylan for taking time to visit with Sean and go in the room with Sean Clancy. When I come back, we'll take a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker and still to come, trainer John Sadler at 10:40 Eastern. This is the Equine Forum presented by FarmPaint.com on HRN.
Championship racing is now at the legendary Pimlico Racecourse. The Pimlico meet offers live racing Thursday through Sundays, with a few exceptions, including a special Memorial Day holiday program on Monday, May 31st. Regular post time is 12:40 p.m. Limited track admissions, or catch all the action via live stream at Pimlico.com. That's Pimlico.com.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper, champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in three decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten McNulty.
midnight storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Turning for home, it's Dahlia, the mare in front. Dialect and Half Avatar, this second by a neck carcass is third, moving up on the extreme outside. Announcer is fourth and top crowd. The end of the stretch is Dahlia in front by a neck. Carcass is second. Dialect and Half, past the grass, third, and here comes one on the aisle on the outside of King Pellinor. Now it's Dahlia and Carcasses, and they're headed in. Dahlia on the inside of Carcasses, and Dahlia is the winner by a head. Carcasses second by three, with past the glass, finishing third.
How about that trip down memory lane? The great Harry Henson with the call of the 1976 Hollywood Invitational Handicap. That was Dahlia, the outstanding race mare, trained by Charlie Whittingham, ridden by Bill Shoemaker, who got the victory that day. And when you think about Charlie Whittingham and you think about Bill Shoemaker, it's easy to remember the Bald Eagle on this day, because we will celebrate the Charlie Whittingham Stakes at Santa Anita. We'll see United, the defending champion, trying to go back-to-back in there. But Charlie Whittingham won that race that is now named in his honor a record seven times. He is tied with Neil Drysdale and Bobby Frankel in that category for most wins by a trainer. Bill Shoemaker, who was aboard Dahlia that day, won it four times. He is second behind Hall of Famer Gary Stevens in terms of number of wins. And all of those individuals I just mentioned have played an integral role in the history of thoroughbred racing. And that leads me right into this week's Stroll Through Racing History with Kurt Becker.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. He was a Canadian superstar who won a pair of American classics and became one of the most influential sires in the history of the sport. His name was Northern Dancer, and today we remember him on the occasion of the 60th anniversary of his birth. Foaled on May 27, 1961 in Oshawa, Ontario, Northern Dancer was a homebred owned by Canadian business tycoon E.P. Taylor. The colt stood only 14 hands as a yearling and was unable to meet his reserve price of $25,000 in the auction ring. It would be one of the few times the phrase, "reserve not attained," would ever be said in the same breath with Northern Dancer. More on that later. As a two-year-old, Northern Dancer won the 50th running of the Remsen Stakes at Aqueduct in overpowering fashion, covering the one-mile distance in stakes record time of 1 minute 35 and 3/5 seconds. His Canadian campaign included a win in the Coronation Futurity, Canada's richest race for two-year-olds, by six lengths. He would be named Canada's champion juvenile for 1963. A bay son of Nearctic with three white feet, Northern Dancer developed into a physically powerful horse, but not a tall one. One sports writer said that his legs were barely long enough to keep his tail off the ground. But another said he had unwavering determination, making him, quote, harder to pass than a third martini, end quote. On May 2, 1964, Northern Dancer went to the post as the 7-2 second betting choice for the 90th running of the Kentucky Derby. He had most recently won the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland as the 1-5 favorite. Trained by Horatio Luro and with Bill Hartack aboard, Northern Dancer won the Kentucky Derby by a neck over the favorite Hill Rise. He stopped the timer in stakes record time of 2 minutes flat for the mile and a quarter distance. He became the first Canadian bred ever to win the Kentucky Derby. Northern Dancer would win the Preakness 2 weeks later, again as the second betting choice, but a third place finish in the Belmont Stakes meant there would be no Triple Crown. Still, the talented colt would win the Queen's Plate by 7.5 lengths at Woodbine, becoming the first and still the only horse to score the Kentucky Derby Queen's Plate double. More honors followed. Champion 3-year-old and Horse of the Year in Canada for 1964. Champion 3-year-old male in the United States.
A dozen years later, in 1976, Northern Dancer would be inducted into both the Canadian and U.S. Halls of Fame. As a sire, Northern Dancer's sons would include English Triple Crown winner Nijinsky. His grandsons would include Chiefs Crown, winner of the inaugural running of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Great-grandson Bet Twice would avenge the family name by winning the Belmont Stakes. Sons such as Danzig and grandsons such as Stormcat and Galileo would perpetuate the dominance of his siring line. In the sales ring, some 174 yearlings by Northern Dancer would sell at Keeneland for a combined price of $160 million, an average of well over $900,000. A son would sell for $10.2 million, a grandson for $13.1 million. As a result of such success, Northern Dancer's stud fee would increase from $10,000 to $1 million over the course of his 24-year stallion career. All told, Northern Dancer would sire 635 foals, including 467 winners and 143 stakes winners. He would boast the highest yearling average of any sire at Keeneland's prestigious July sale on a dozen different occasions. And his 257 lifetime yearlings sold at public auction would gross over $181 million, an average price of more than $700,000. Northern Dancer died on November 16, 1990, at the Taylor family's Winfields Farm in Chesapeake City, Maryland. He was 29. Northern Dancer was described by jockey Ron Turcotte as bold and brave. Bill Hartek called him brawn and guts. A member of the Winfields Farm staff once said of Northern Dancer, quote, "He was a street fighter. He was cocky. He was a ball of fire," end quote. Today, we remember the Canadian superstar who became a worldwide phenomenon. We remember Northern Dancer, born 60 years ago this week in Ontario. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Oh, what a story. The great Northern Dancer remembered on this Saturday morning. My thanks to Kurt for putting that piece together and to Lane's End and Keeneland for making it all possible every single week. When I come back, we'll turn our attention to the Test of the Champion and we'll talk about Rock Your World, the Santa Anita Derby winner who is looking to get back on track for trainer John Sadler. John joins me next here on the Equine Forum presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
The spring meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th. New for this year's meet will be the Stephen Foster Preview Day on May 29th with seven stakes races as we gear up for the June 26th Stephen Foster. And don't forget, new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with seven total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning You're In Fleur-de-Lis for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. With strong purses throughout the meet, you're not going to want to miss the spring meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
Pit Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
It is Royal Ship or Country Grammar in a thriller. Country Grammar, Royal Ship or Country Grammar. It will be Royal Ship to outfinish Country Grammar, and they were well clear of Independence Hall in third. In the Californian.
That was a huge win for Royal Ship, the son of Darley Stallion Midshipman, and it came in the Grade 2 Californian at Santa Anita on April 17th. He will start next in Monday's Grade 1 Hollywood Gold Cup, and he is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Midshipman. He, along with Tappet, Curlin, Into Mischief, and Ghost Sapper, are the only stallions with three or more horses to earn a 100-plus buyer in 2021. Plus, he's the leading sire of 2021 juveniles. To learn more about Midshipman and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Anytime that you've done something a few times, you have ideas how you want to do it the next time. You know, and I want to enjoy it a lot. I know that because I realize how, you know, how hard it is. You know, you can catch bad weather. You know, a lot of things can go wrong, get wiped out at the start. So, you know, having been there, I know how tough it is, and I really want to enjoy the experience. And obviously, this is the best chance I've gone in with. So I want to go over there with a good horse and enjoy it.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was trainer John Sadler talking about going to the Kentucky Derby and enjoying the experience. That was from an interview that John did with me after winning the Santa Anita Derby with Rock Your World. That was on April 10th on this very same show. And who knew at the time that the man who has saddled more than 2,600 winners would almost be making a prediction at that point. He talked about the trouble that you can run into with the weather or even getting wiped out at the start. That was not a prediction he wanted to come true. It did, unfortunately, for Rock Your World. He lost all chance at the start of the Kentucky Derby. He's hoping for clear sailing next Saturday when he makes it to Elmont, New York, in Belmont Park. And John joins me now from his base in Southern California. John, good morning. Appreciate the visit, my friend.
Good morning. That was kind of eerie listening to that. So,
yeah, so, you know, it very eerie.
Yeah. But anyway, how are you?
I am very well and looking forward to seeing Rock Your World strut his stuff next Saturday. And again, that clip, almost a prediction of things to come. And I know that you didn't want to have it play out that way, but let's look back on it. 4 weeks ago today, that's what happened. Tell me about that Derby experience.
Yeah, I mean, it was unfortunate. The horse had a good week there. It looked great. And unfortunately, the start was not good for him. So, you know, it's the first time I've ever turned around and looked at my clients at the start of a long-distance race and say, you know, we're in trouble here. So we're moving on.
Yeah, and that's really all you can do. And it has to be so deflating for you. You make all the right moves. The horse does everything right coming into the race. And then something that is completely out of your control as the trainer happens, and you're out of it. It had to be so deflating.
Yeah, it really was. You know, in where I'm at now today is, you know, since I've trained horses as long as I have, you know, I really have the ability to put that in the rearview mirror and go on and look at the next one. So that's my focus, not just with Rock Your World, but all horses, really. My owner has a good analogy. He's a baseball player. When you strike out, you know, 8 or 9 men later, you're back up at the plate. You got to put that out of your brain. So, you know, we came back to California. I wanted to let him kind of chart his course. You know, we were careful when we got back here to see how he's doing, and he's done really well. So we're off again for hopefully redemption.
The other thing you told me in that interview, John, was that you were really excited because this was maybe the best opportunity that you had to add the Kentucky Derby to your resume. You have to feel the same way going into the Belmont, don't you?
Yeah, really. I mean, we're excited. He had a brilliant work here yesterday. I know it'll look a little fast to, like, the average handicapper, but we think this is a horse that, you know, has a high cruising speed. You've heard me say this before. And we didn't really want to fight him much, so he just kind of cruised around there yesterday very well. So, you know, we're very excited going back to New York and this good a chance.
You know, you had to see some things that you liked going into the Santa Anita Derby. Obviously, he performed very well in his first try on dirt and won off quite easily that day. And he beat the eventual Kentucky Derby winner in Medina Spirit and won by 4 1/4 lengths. Are you seeing some things similar in Rock Your World going into the Belmont Stakes that you saw before the Santa Anita Derby effort?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, the distance doesn't faze him. You know, he went out pretty good yesterday, and he looked like he had a gallop. He didn't look like he had a workout. So I feel really good about his condition. you know, just the way he looks and eating and everything like that. So, you know, when you come off a really bad race, you know, when you look at the form, you know, my focus is just to look for the next one. But I'm happy with my horse, and I'm excited to be going back for the big race in New York.
I had said earlier in the show that horses that do well in the Belmont are not your late-running closers. You would think that would be the case with this race being a mile and a half, but typically it's horses that are up on the lead or close to the lead throughout, and that has to make you feel pretty good, too, knowing the way that Rock Your World likes to run.
You're preaching to the choir. that's exactly how we feel, you know. So, I mean, that's what our thinking is.
Why do you think that's the case, John? You would think it would be just the opposite.
Well, you know, just, I mean, my brain goes to American Pharoah and just a lot of the runners. I think it's just a rhythm thing, you know, when they can get, sometimes there's not a huge amount of pace. It's hard for a deep closer to win the Belmont. A deep closer can win if Rosario's riding him, but fortunately I've got Rosario on my horse. So, you know, we'll just see how it shapes up.
I think, and I've said this for a long time, I think Joel is maybe the best rider in the game aboard a front runner. He's brilliant.
Yeah, he's a great all-around rider. He's in, you know, he's in his prime of his career. So, you know, we think it's going to be good.
I talked with you before the Derby, and I asked you about the connection to Ron McAnally and his wife, Deborah, and they, of course, the breeders of Rock Your World. And we talked about the fact that Ron had never been able to win a Kentucky Derby as a trainer. Well, he didn't win a Belmont either. How cool would it be to pick up your first win in a Triple Crown race and to give him his first?
Oh, it'd be great. No doubt about it. You know, he's been one of the Hall of Fame trainers here in California, spent his whole life here, been nothing but an asset to the game. So, you know, for him at this point, it'd be just great, you know. And I stop and I talk to him and I tell him how the horse is doing, and he likes that. And this has been, you know, good for him, you know, to have this horse running, keep him good and interested. You know, he's up there pretty good in years, but he's a great trainer.
You think about putting a little super glue on the inside of Joel's irons for this one?
I'll leave that to Joel.
Yeah, it's a lot like a pitcher, right, that uses the Vaseline. Remember they used to put the Vaseline on the baseball? Maybe we put a little super glue on the bottom of his boot or something.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to be happy to not be in a 20-horse field. So hopefully we get a good draw.
Talking with trainer John Sadler here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. John, before I let you go, you have a couple of horses coming up in big stakes races at Santa Anita on Monday, the Hollywood Gold Cup and the Gamely. You'll send out Haywood's Beach in the Hollywood Gold Cup and then come back with Stella Star in the Gamely. Tell me a little bit more about those two horses, if you would.
Well, Haywood's Beach is a horse that we started, you know, he has a very turfy pedigree, so we started him on turf. And, you know, he won a couple of races and ran pretty well. But the funny part of the story is we were working him with Rock Your World at Santa Anita as we were getting ready, Rock Your World, for the big races. And the exercise rider kept telling me, this horse is getting better and better on the dirt. You ought to try him on the dirt. So he ran a very very fast rag number, first time he ran on dirt, came back and won impressive the other day. So I think he's got kind of a new shelf life on dirt, so we're excited about it, him running back on Monday. And Stella Star is a Group 3 winner in Europe, second and two stakes over here, coming off a layup. You know, I wasn't sure if I was going to run this race, and then with him, some of the East Coast shippers couldn't get over here. I decided to put her in, so hopefully I have her fit enough first time out.
Yeah, well, good luck in those two races. Good luck next Saturday. I'm assuming you're going to travel to Belmont after those races on Monday. Is that the plan?
Yeah, I'm going to get out here Tuesday, Wednesday, and actually my owner's got, I guess, some really good tickets for the Yankees. I'll be at Yankee Stadium on Thursday, then at Belmont Friday for the Drew North, and then Saturday for the Belmont.
Yeah, I'm jealous. It's pretty good to be John Sadler these days. John, good luck next Saturday. We'll be watching Rock Your World, and all the best in that race, and all the best on Monday with those contenders too.
Thank you so much. I got to go back to work.
Go get it. John Sadler here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. It has to go back to work. Think about it. It's, 10 till 8, almost coming up on 10 till 8 on the West Coast. So my thanks to John for taking time out of his training schedule and his work schedule to do that interview with me this morning. Look, Rock Your World, keep in mind, people might forget, he was a perfect 3-for-3 going into the Kentucky Derby. And he was one of the favorites in the Derby, despite having not started as a 2-year-old. We hear that a lot. Of course, Justify put an end to that whole streak. But he was also undefeated. And people might forget that. You won't forget it when you look at the past performances, because those three wins were very impressive. 2 on the turf and then that win in the Santa Anita Derby. But John's hoping that his running style, his pedigree, he's the son of Candy Ride out of an Empire Maker mare. You want to talk about a mile and a half pedigree, you got it right there. You can't ask for anything more. And the dam charmed the maker. We did a little feature on Hall of Famer Ron McAnally and his wife Deborah before the Kentucky Derby. We aired it on our Derby broadcast. That mare, Charm the Maker, continues to throw good horses. I think Rock Your World has a really big chance. All he has to do is get off cleanly, maybe get to the front, maybe find himself in a good position. People were thinking that he was going to be the one to put all the pressure on Medina Spear early, and when he got off a step slow, Joel didn't have his boot in the iron. All of those things played into what happened in the Derby. Now, maybe Medina Spirit would have won anyway. Maybe he would have outgamed everybody like he did. But Rock Your World proved that when he gets out there on the lead, at least that one day at Santa Anita in the Santa Anita Derby, that he's better than Medina Spirit. Well, he doesn't have to contend with the Derby winner next Saturday, but he will have to contend with the Todd Squad. He'll have to contend with Hot Rod Charlie, who was third in the Kentucky Derby, and with Rombauer, the Preakness winner. It's going to be a fantastic Belmont Stakes. Forget about no Triple Crown. This is going to be one heck of a renewal of the Test of the Champion. Again, our coverage next Saturday, 5 o'clock Eastern. This show, by the way, from 8 to 11, will be a special Belmont Stakes edition of the program. Several different angles and storylines that I'm going to cover for you next Saturday on this program. But then, stay with me at 5 o'clock Eastern next Saturday afternoon. Myself, Kurt Becker, Tom Leach, our team will bring you coverage of the 103rd Test of the Champion in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. And really excited to partner with them again this year and to be part of the Triple Crown and bring you that coverage here on the network. So all the affiliates are listed on our website, the SiriusXM channel information, and you can listen to us worldwide on our site as well, horseracingradio.net. When I come back, I will update you on the poll question, some of the responses that we have been receiving, and tell you a little bit more about what's ahead here on the network. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, proud to once again be your home for the Triple Crown.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 Greatest Stakes winners and more lifetime Grade 1 winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and Grade 1 victorist, Valiance.
Valiance with the lead. Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judmont Spinster.
And 2-year-old sensation, Essential Quality, winner of the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tappet, standing at Gainesway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Fans, join us for world-class racing here at Santa Anita this Saturday, Sunday, and Memorial Day Monday. On Saturday, we'll have a total of three graded stakes, the Grade 3 Daytona, the Grade 2 Triple Bend, and the Grade 2 Charles Whittingham. First post time on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday is at 1 o'clock. Our main event on Sunday is the Grade 2 Summertime Oaks, and on Monday, we'll have three Grade 1 stakes, the Hollywood Gold Cup for three-year-olds and up at a mile and one-quarter, the Gamely for fillies and mares at a mile and one-eighth on turf, and the Shoemaker Mile, that's all on Memorial Day Monday. Although Santa Anita is now open to the general public, please visit santaanita.com/open for reserved seating, as walk-up admission is not yet available. If you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's first.com/bet.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Well, the 146-page June issue of Blood Horse Magazine is a cover-to-cover read with more than a dozen feature stories, which include Seize the Big Day. Belmont Stakes Day, of course, ranks among racing's most lucrative days, with the stakes card surpassed only by the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Then rocking their world, you just heard from John Sadler. Well, how about this? As training opportunities wane, Hall of Fame trainer Ron McAnally still waits for the next big horse while savoring his role as the breeder of Rock Your World. That's a story by Jay Hovde. And Looking Back by Bob Ehalt, which is a controversial from the start look at New York City off-track betting, which generated big handle and even bigger losses. You can download a copy of the new issue from the Blood Horse Magazine, and you can do that on the app via the App Store or Google Play, or subscribe today and receive a free gift at bloodhorse.com/subscribers-only. Yeah, good stuff from Blood Horse there. And also one other reminder from claim to fame, as I like to call it, don't miss the 2021 Claiming Crown at Gulfstream Park with full fields, big purses, and great betting opportunities. For more information about how you can nominate to this year's Claiming Crown, go to claimingcrown.com. And that is an event that is produced in partnership by the National HBPA, TOBA, the Florida HBPA, and Gulfstream Park. Great stuff. From claim to fame, go to claimingcrown.com. Update on the poll question. Question of the day, which was brought to you by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. So many of you taking time to weigh in. If you could go back in time and attend just one Belmont Stakes, which one would you choose? Affirmed in Ali Dar in 1978, getting a lot of response. The Big A, or as he's known now, the Beast of the Belmont, who you hear here on the network all the time, says a little hard for him to choose, although I asked him for one, he gave me six. Rags to Riches, Drosselmeyer, Union Rags, Tonalist, Creator, Taprit. Big A, pick one. How about Creator in an epic win at the Wire? That was a good one, too. The 1998 Belmont, yeah, Victory Gallop, Real Quiet. That was spectacular. Great choice there. Here's a good one. The 1920 Belmont with Man of War. That would be fantastic. That would be really cool. Lemon Drop Kid. Good one there. Secretariat, obviously. Yeah, Secretariat would be great. 2015, How about Ali Darn Affirmed in 78, 2014 with Tonalist, Secretariat getting a vote, Rags to Riches also getting a vote, and 1973 for obvious reasons. Yeah, lots of great responses to that question. Keep them coming on this Memorial Day weekend. And I do want to make sure I wish everyone a very happy and safe and healthy Memorial Day. And don't forget those who have made the ultimate sacrifice for our country. My thanks to Michael Hernan for being with me here this morning, to Kevin Kirstein as well, taking a look at all the big races at Churchill Downs, Flavian Pratt. You heard that interview in the second hour of the program. Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne, my interview with longtime exercise rider Greg Smothers. It was fantastic. If you missed it, go back to the website and listen. My conversation with Terry Meeks and John Velasquez of the Jockeys Guild, talking about the situation in Monmouth and New Jersey with the whip issues and the whip rules. You heard In the Room with Sean Clancy, that visit with Dylan Davis, Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history, and my thanks to John Sadler for joining me just a short time ago. Again, back next Saturday, 8 to 11 Eastern with this show, and then join me at 5 Eastern for our coverage of the 153rd Belmont Stakes. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, to Chauncey for handling all of our social media. Look forward to talking to you all next week. It's Belmont Stakes Week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Visit our site, horseracingradio.net, for a complete Belmont Week schedule and to listen worldwide and to listen to a podcast of this show, too. Head over there now at horseracingradio.net. I'll talk to you next week. I'm Mike Pena. Go Steelers.